Don't mess with the best, man, because the best don't mess.
It's time to talk.
Your thoughts.
I do genuinely think it does that with the parents.
For me, he was a bridge between myself and my untapped potential.
Flattery will get you nowhere in here.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I couldn't even answer her because, you know what, she wasn't wrong.
The voice of Cork.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate to Credit Union. Morning all. I see the Sun headline this morning calling it Floods of Tears. Warning of more rain hell as 100 mils are set to fall in different counties and a lot of them under status yellow for 17 of them. They're talking about most being affected by the rainy season in Ireland. And you got a combination, like the Mirror is saying this morning, of saturated ground anyway because of falls of rain. On top of that, then you've got high river levels and then flooding and poor visibility. And you need to be very careful driving as well, particularly with regards to pooling on roads and what have you. Well, it's a bizarre story, actually. Cork BO picked up on it overnight where they were talking about this trend of wetter weather, particularly down around this part of the country where we've had four times, between three and four times, the average rainfall amount that you'd expect, say, for the first 2 weeks of February. And, you know, that's for the likes of Cork and Kerry and Waterford. So it's been much wetter, probably milder, but certainly wetter than you'd expect, say, when you compare it to this time last year. Well, the SNA story that we dealt with on the air yesterday morning and the cruelty involved in that has been paused. The ministers have stepped in now for different departments and decided, okay, we'll just pause this, which would lead to all sorts of chaos and cruelty and unkind cuts to families who have children that thrive with the help of SNAs. Now, the worry about this, of course, I'm reading from the Sun this morning, they're going to have a review instead. But you would think they would have had all of that before they decided this draconian cut would go ahead. But people power makes a difference. They come up with stupid ideas, and then when the public protest and get angry about it, they change their mind. Well, hang on a second. They may not change their mind because they did the same with the blister packs, and then they slipped that in again in the new year. So I think it might be a case of pause now on the SNA and then slip it in later and hope that nobody will notice. The story regarding Larry Murphy continues to dominate the front page of the papers with regards to the Garda dig. It's making the front of three red tops today where they are digging land looking for buried cars. I know, I hate even talking about this kind of thing at this hour of the morning, that there could be remains of a girl or a woman inside there, or perhaps even two different separate cars. But they're digging land around about 6 minutes drive from where Larry Murphy was caught trying to murder a victim, having raped her a number of times. So this is to say, as an example, with regards to Deirdre Jacobs. He's suspected of killing her before dumping her remains in a car and burying the car. And that's why you have big diggers in particular areas of the dig site in County Wicklow. And this is very close to where the rapist subjected another woman to a brutal ordeal back in the year 2000. You may well remember this. This goes back where, by all accounts, he kidnapped his victim in Carlow, drove through a rural area, repeatedly raped her, bundled her into the back of his Punto, and then drove to a remote area of Wicklow, and he raped her again. Now, he then, forgive me for saying this at this hour of the morning, but it's absolutely gruesome. Multiple rapes. Then he put a plastic bag over her head and was trying to suffocate her to death. But then two passing hunters came along. And of course, the jig was up then for Larry Murphy. So that's why they're very interested in particular areas, to see if that general area may lead to some clues or, sadly, the discovery of bodies. Papers this morning then also talk of Seamus Cullerton. Now, it's very interesting because just from coming off air yesterday, his exportation or deportation, I should say, from America was put on hold because his lawyer is arguing that the government in America historically has forgiven certain immigration violations, like overstaying a visa, I suppose, particularly if they have immediate relatives, like a wife in the case of Seamus Cullerton in America. And he's hoping that's what will happen for his client. So temporarily suspended after this court ruling. But the Independent this morning talks more to his twin daughters, Heather and Melissa Morrissey. And apparently they said that they first found out who their father was when they were 13, when they were told he lived in America. And after discussing it amongst themselves, the two twins then decided to get in contact with him. And they said it was, they couldn't believe when he went on the radio over the past week or 10 days, well, week, I suppose, he never once mentioned in an interview with me or indeed with Liveline, he never mentioned that he had two daughters in Ireland. He talked about his wife and he talked about his dog. They said he went on the radio, didn't even mention us, but did talk about his wife and dogs. They said that he's now just digging a bigger hole for himself at this stage. At the end of the day, it was their mother, they say, that reared them. And he didn't get to make it back for the death of his own father in 2023, they said, because he couldn't come home. It's a lengthy interview where they say, Heather says, it's a mess of his own making. In all fairness, he went on the internet talking about this, and of course he was going to get a backlash. Now, apparently, and this is a story that keeps on giving, they said that he offered to pay for the twins to fly to the States, but they ultimately decided against going. They said, well, we just thought, why should we make an effort to go and see him when he was the one that left us? So that story continues to dominate many. So we'll have to see what happens with regards to the pausing on his deportation. The front of the Examiner talks, and this is, I hope, going to happen, because at this stage it's about the cabinet meeting today to come up with some kind of a new digital AI strategy. But the headline says the plan is to ban under 16s from social media. How it would be enforceable, I have no idea in the wide earthly world. I mean, Australia did it. Wouldn't it make more sense, as the Examiner puts it today, if this was a European-wide under 16 social media ban that everybody came together right across the European Union? But like, you look at social media and AI and how things really can be faked or created in the, you know, click of a finger. AI has been used for all sorts of different things, and it is a great tool for research, I have to say. It comes with a caveat that sometimes it can be bewilderingly inaccurate. And you see an example of that making the front of the Mail today, where the headline says, beware of solicitors using AI. And this is according to judges who are warning the public over solicitors using artificial intelligence to compose court documents. Apparently, at least three cases have been thrown out because of error-strewn submissions that were created by AI. And one judge said people have fallen into the clutches of charlatans, and that those that engage with AI for court documents should face heavy penalties. Isn't it be a bad idea if you're dealing with solicitors and they give you an honest answer to ask them, do you do all of this work yourself, or do you use ChatGPT or, you know, whatever the other case may be, artificial intelligence? And the papers then talk of the lives that we lead. And I'm wondering if this may well be the same here with regards to the stats from the English Times this morning with regards to weight jabs or fat jabs, or call them whatever you wish. And good luck to anybody who's changing their life with the jabs. You know, I mean, it's your choice to engage if you do so. Mind you, in the UK, four times more women than men are on the various jabs. And when I say the various jabs, I'm talking about Mounjaro and Wegovy and things like that. And people are spending hundreds of pounds every month to buy them online from private pharmacies, and it can be done. So it's four times more women than men, and the peak age of women engaging in weight jabs is between 30 and 39. This kind of research is very interesting because, 80% of those that are using the jabs are women, 20% of those using the jabs are men. And they say that social pressures on women are forcing them more so than men. And that's why the figure is four times higher for women to stay slim. And then you have influencers and female celebrities being on these various drugs. One of the most amazing changes in body shape, I suppose, would be probably Serena Williams. I know there are others besides. So women see this then, and it increases the pressure on what they're seeing on social media. And then other forms of marketing dominate the Mail today with regards to the Advertising Standards Authority. I don't know if you gamble or you bet. It's your own business if you do, and you do so responsibly. But there is a betting company called TonyBet that has been breached a couple of times by the advertising watchdog for ads that they've been engaging in on YouTube. I can't say whether they advertise anywhere else, but certainly the YouTube ones. And two of them, they've been breached because of adverts. The first one is a gambler on the toilet with his phone in his hand. And the tagline says, only 3% of people can do this. make money while sitting on the toilet. Now, that, I think, to be quite honest with you, is very, very irresponsible advertising. Considering that it's trying to claim that it's easy to gamble, and they don't talk about the dangers of it. And they say, you know, you can gamble anywhere, even on your toilet seat, and make money. And of course, that is not true. There was a second one then, which was a second Tony Bet YouTube ad, which had a woman holding a baby with on-screen text saying, "It's hard to pay my rent and take care of my babies." And then a little later in the video, it shows the same woman giving a thumbs up alongside a text that said, "But I made $8,500 last month." See what I mean? Talk about irresponsible and planting the wrong idea. As in, if you're struggling to pay your rent or to take care of your babies, why don't you gamble some more? And of course, it can be very, very addictive and have calamitous consequences. If you want to look at addictions, I see the Sun this morning has got an article on Gordon Ramsay, who has admitted that the misery of his father when he was a young fella put him on the straight and narrow to be a better parent himself because of his own nightmare childhood. He says in an interview, it's an extensive interview that will air on a new documentary on Netflix, apparently. He said he had a tough childhood due to abusive alcoholic Gordon Sr., his dad, and he doesn't want to follow in his dad's footsteps. So on that basis, then, family is very important, and he adores his children. He said that I sadly had a torrid relationship with my father. I couldn't wait to spend time out of the house away from him. I had to sit there weekend after weekend and watch him ruin his life through alcohol. So he talks very openly and candidly about his young life. And then you talk about, you know, the things that you might like to do, whether it's, you know, having a night in, putting on the slippers, or going for a quiet drink as opposed to a busy pub or whatever the case may be. These are all signs of aging. And I only pass this on in a lighthearted manner because, no, there is no one box fits all, no one hat fits all. But they're saying sitting down to put on your socks. I mean, I've been sitting down to put on my socks since I was a young fella. I don't see any relevance in that whatsoever. I mean, they could say the odd groan. Maybe you might say, oh, well, I need to stretch more. Oh, I need to push more weights. But they give a list of them this morning where they spoke to 5,040 pluses, saying, you know, they want a quiet drink over a night out on the town or the tiles. That they no longer, like, signs of growing old, you're older. You care less about fashion trends. A recurring ache that does not disappear means that indicates that you have reached the old category. You've ticked the old box. I know an awful lot of young people that groan, never mind somebody. I mean, what is old anyway? Is it 50? Is it 60? Is it 70? Like what are the other ones that are interesting? There's an awful lot of them. They say 33% said they realized they were no longer young when they started to notice a groan when they bend down. Ugh, God almighty. You're finished. The game is up. Other signs, and there's 25 of them. I'm not going to read them all out. Is sitting... oh my God, I absolutely hate this. You get a group of people and all they do when they sit around talking about is their medicines, their prescriptions, their aches, their pains, their upcoming surgery, their how unwell they are, and it dominates conversation. That's very bad for your mental health. You need to walk away from those conversations because they will just wear you down. Anyway, they give some options then where they say, take vitamins, choose healthier snacks, and eat more protein. I'm not sure about all of this protein lark, though, when you see all of this protein advertising, really, whether it's 100% kosher in that regard. But they don't mention pushing weights or going for fast walks or attacking greenways east and west of us or climbing hills and mountains or anything like that. Just take vitamins, healthier snacks, eat more protein. I don't know. I don't know what the secret is to Jeremy Irons because he's 77 years old now and he looks about 50 to me. And he always had. I've always found him to be a very attractive man, to be honest with you. And he's been living amongst us for well over like 30 years. He's got a kick-ass castle down in West Cork and he's just the coolest dude on the planet. But he thought about taking an Irish passport, which he'd be well entitled to because we consider him Irish anyway because he lived with us so long. But recently apparently he decided not to. And this is a warning to all of us. And the reason that Jeremy decided not to take an Irish passport was because if he did, the taxes he would pay are much heavier and higher in Ireland than they are in the UK. So what else is new? You could look at most countries around the world whose taxes are lower than ours, but I suppose it's just because we live in such a perfect country and we're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Give me a break. But a little tip for you, because I was talking about, thinking about Jeremy Irons this morning over the Christmas, and I had wanted to do it for years and years. We watched Brideshead Revisited. Don't know if you ever saw it. I mean, if you like period stuff going back to the 1920s and things like that, this is most definitely for you. Perhaps you saw it. It aired in the early 80s on the BBC, but it is absolutely fantastic. There's a few series of it, and if you're into that kind of thing, you will really love it. Brideshead Revisited, and he is just a superstar in that. Mad about the guy.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
With Elevate Credit Union, where members matter. Download the mobile app to your phone.
Pick up the phone, 0818104106. You can text 0868104106. Now, after the break, you're aware that earlier this week, we had the chilling details in the case of Noel Toomey. 64-year-old Noel Toomey, who was jailed for 8 years. He got a 9-year sentence, 1 year suspended, after carrying out a terrifying and sustained attack on his wife back in 2024. His wife being Jackie Toomey. She was asleep in the family home in Knocknaheeny. He goes down anyway and he boils a pot of water and he poured boiling water over her head. He also went downstairs at the same time and he brought up a claw hammer and he repeatedly hit her with the claw hammer as she lay helpless in bed. Jackie's bravely spoken out about suffering for over 40 years in an abusive and controlling relationship. And I'll chat with Jackie after the break.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Text 0868104106, the Neil Prendeville Show. Back to the phone lines we go, revisiting a topic of conversation yesterday. Jackie Toomey joins me by phone. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking the call. And can I just say, before we start, it was very courageous of you yesterday to answer the questions of the media and the press. It's a very brave and courageous thing to do because I imagine to some extent you end up reliving much of the nightmare. Jackie, were you happy with the sentence? 9 years, 1 year suspended?
Yes, because I was dreading that it was going to be less and I was saying even if it's 8, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah. I mean, I know that the DPP, when bringing the case, had said that what he did to you, Noel Toomey, was at the higher end. Anywhere between 10 and 15 years. What is he now, 64?
He's 65.
65. So could he be out perhaps at 70, 71?
Yeah. Hopefully he'll be dead. Sorry.
Yeah. Listen, you're entitled to feel whatever way you want, girl. I mean, you were quoted by saying you hope that he rots in jail. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yes.
And what a relief, I suppose, this week as well, because you were over 2 years waiting for the court case, the guilty verdict and sentencing, right?
And so many times going thinking it was going to happen and it didn't happen. Walking out in disgust every time.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of continuing the pain, the torture.
Yeah.
And the nightmare. Are you having trouble sleeping now?
Yes, all the time. I'm doing a trick. Like we say, I say C, and then I try and think of all the things beginning with C, and I start, you know, like cat, cow, everything, anything beginning with C until I drop off.
And that works for you, like counting sheep would work for other people?
Yeah, that's the only, I saw some months ago, and I started doing it just to try and sleep, and it's working. Because otherwise he's in my brain, otherwise.
I hope there will be a time when he won't be in your brain and you're not reliving it. You had enough damage done to your body and your brain as it is. You're lucky to be alive. I mean, the pain that you went through even in the CUH is unbearable to think of, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was the burns were the worst. The burns were so painful.
My head
was just numb. My head was just numb. But the burns, they were so, so painful.
I can't get over the fact that you couldn't defend yourself. It was the most cowardly attack on anybody in the home where they should feel safe. You were asleep.
He's a coward.
Yeah.
He wouldn't do it to me when I'm standing in front of him.
Yeah.
Because he's a coward.
And do you mind me asking, are you comfortable talking about the events that led up to it? You
know, I
got the impression from reading the different court reports that you were actually breaking away. You were taking back your independence and taking back control. I got the feeling that he wasn't terribly happy with that.
Oh, no, he wasn't happy. That's why he done it. He's like one of those people, if I can't have her attention all the time or 24 hours a day, then nobody else can.
Oh, total, a perfect example of coercive control and narcissistic behaviour. You understand all of these words now, of course you do.
Well, I'm learning those words.
Yeah. Because you've had to go through it.
Yeah.
And tell me, what do you recall of the event?
I came home from a night out with my sister and my brother. My brother was after having 3 strokes, so myself and my sister take him out every Sunday. Because we're close. And I came home about 3:05. That's the time I'd normally come home. We dropped my brother home, my sister home, then I'm last. I had a cigarette on my rocking chair outside, used the bathroom, got into my pyjamas, went into bed, and my fan wouldn't work. And I asked him, I got up and I said, I was, no, my fan isn't working. Can I borrow yours? And I get a new one during the week. And he got up and he plugged the fan into me and I went to sleep. And the next thing I knew, I was waking up screaming with the most horrific pain. I was screaming like a banshee. And I think I got hit in, when I was in bed as well, because it was so fast, because there was blood all over my bed. And then I got hit another 3 times trying to get out of the bedroom.
Give me now, of course, that started with the pot of boiling water that he went down and premeditatedly went down and boiled that pot of boiling water. Did he have to go to a shed and plan to pick up the claw hammer there?
No, we're downstairs. We're in a ground floor flat and we've got a big long walk-in storage area. And it was in there. I mean, I didn't even think he knew there was a hammer in there because the man is useless at doing anything. So,
but there it was, nonetheless.
There was 2 hammers in there.
So you're woken from your sleep. Not being able to defend yourself, of course, after the boiling water and the claw hammer attack to the head. You have no idea what's going on except excruciating pain. Is he standing over you or what?
I was asleep and there's just the water, just the shock of the hot water hitting me and the blows to my head. And then trying to get out of the room, I got out and I got to my front door open and I stopped there once I hit the porch and I stopped to go back in to my son. And he just walked out past me and walked out the gate and I was at the closing the door. He didn't utter one word, not one word during it.
Good God. He was eventually flagged down a Garda car somewhere up. I don't know.
That was probably a car coming up to help me because my phone, I had facial recognition on my phone and my phone wouldn't work because it couldn't recognize my face. It was so bad.
Oh, my God.
So my son, 16 at the time, had to get the help for me. Guards, ambulance, bring his brother and sister. So...
And what were, I mean, you were together 43 years, of which 40 were years of marriage. What were those decades, what were those years like?
Oh, God. Nightmare. Walking on eggshells all the time, waiting for him to start. Waiting for a good day. Waiting then for about 3 days after that, there might be 3 bad days. Don't know what kind of humour he's going to be in. If he'd speak to you one day, talk to you the next day. When he wants something, he'll talk to you.
So you never
know,
actually...
really bad, really bad since 2019, 2020. It got worse after that. I was watching him every night because he'd get up into the bathroom a lot of times at night and I'd watch him make sure that he goes back into bed without doing anything to me.
So even in those years previous, you were in fear of your life?
Yes.
I think you said you were terrified of him.
It was a matter of when.
Did you talk to anybody about it? Was any of your family or friends, were you very close? You're very close to your family. Were they aware of his behaviour?
No, because he isolated me from them for years. It was only since I moved back up to the north side that I started to take control. Because I was back in my own area, near my sister.
He didn't like that. So, he didn't like you taking back control.
No, no, no.
And what about the early years, though? Because you clearly must have fallen in love with a different person, did you?
Oh, he was very charming at start. He'd collect me in a taxi and bring me chocolates and roses and, you know, and then I moved in with him a week before my 18th birthday. I had a baby girl a week before my 19th birthday. So, and we got married in the January. And, I mean, like, I was 17.
Yeah.
I didn't know any better.
Yeah. This charming man who loved bombed you with flowers and chocolates and everything. And
and
did it start to turn then quickly?
The first time he put his hands around my neck, I was after losing a change, he was after giving it to me. It must have fallen off on a night out and I missed it, and he put his hands around my neck. That was the first time he put his hands on me. And he split me with a bottle once inside in Jury's Hotel in front of everybody. My daughter was 16, then she's 40 now.
And then there was more control, you're saying, where the isolation began. Yes. Did you say he wasn't happy or
comfortable? My isolation began in the very start.
In what way? Not being allowed to see friends, is it? Having to let him know where you were?
I had no friends. I'd go up to visit my mother once a week. And my oldest fell off the chair one night when I was up there, and it was my fault because I wasn't there.
Would there be violence then?
Yeah, I remember my niece had she was being christened, and I actually went out on that night. That was a family night. I went out on that, and when I got home, he beat the living daylights out of me because he didn't want me out there that night with my family. He didn't want me anywhere, so I used to keep away from my family because I knew what I'd get when I got home.
But what about the injuries or the bruising or the damage that he did to you from beatings? Would people notice it, or would you just hide at home?
Oh, I've often turned off the school with black eyes.
And would people just ignore that and not ask you why or anything?
I suppose people didn't want to ask. Yeah. Didn't want to be interfering. That was back in. I remember going to school. My daughter was about 30 years ago. Would have been 36 years ago. Black eyes.
I mean, that's so sad for so much of your life to be living in fear like that, or as you say, walking on
eggshells. My left ear, if the wind goes into my left ear, it hurts a lot because I got a box in my ear once, so I can't have the cold going into it.
And
that still affects me as well.
And you know, after these vicious, violent assaults upon you by this abusive, evil brute of a man, would he be apologetic after it?
Yeah, you know I love you. I'm so sorry it won't happen again. You know I love you. We're married. It's better for worse and all this stuff.
Okay, there was all of that old stuff. And then was there also, you made me do it. It was your fault. If you hadn't done this, then the other. Yeah, everything was your fault.
As I always say, if the sun doesn't come up tomorrow, it's my fault.
Yeah. Did you ever start to believe that? That kind of control can lead somebody to believing that.
Yeah, you would. When it's been drummed into you for 40 years, you're thinking it's you.
Oh, it's such a wonderful thing that's all behind you.
He'd call me a whore, and he'd look up and down at me. You know, I put on a dress a couple of years ago, and it was my first time wearing a dress in 36 or 37 years, and he looked up and down at me. You know, who do you think you are, Marilyn Monroe?
He really knew, I have to say, he really knew how to hurt you both physically and emotionally, didn't he? Very much.
And he would take my money out of my purse. If I had my money to go out on a Sunday, I remember I forgot to get something from the sitting room, and I came in to get it, and he was in my bag taking money out of it.
Do you work at all?
Him work, no.
Never.
Why would he work when he was getting money off? No. He was like, what do I want a job for when I'm getting money? He's one of those people that don't believe in work once everything is handed to him. I worked. I cleaned houses for years. The minute I got a car, I put up notices for cleaning houses. Oh, and I had 10 houses a week and an office over the weekend. I worked until I couldn't anymore.
Just to keep a roof over the heads of your family, food on the table.
To be able to get stuff if I wanted to take away, or if we wanted a night out to do it. And we had nights out because I worked.
Or grocery shopping. Or a bill to be paid.
Yeah.
He sits back and does absolutely nothing, and you do all the heavy lifting.
I just come home with €100 cash every day. So we were able to go 3 nights a week. we'd go to Clancy's, we'd go to Flaherty's, we'd go Friday nights or Saturday nights, we'd go on 3 nights a week. Until I couldn't walk anymore because I've a lot of health issues myself.
I can imagine you work so hard. Would you describe him as having been, say, for instance, a street angel and a house devil? If I were to have met the two of you out now,
a neighbour said to me down the road, "God, I never thought. No, he was like that. I always thought you were a happy couple." I mean, I get time talking to people. What are you talking to them for?
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm a people person. If anyone knows me, I'm a people person. I'm a social person.
Yeah.
I like meeting people.
Yeah.
I love meeting people.
And
he's
what?
Antisocial.
It's all an act for him in public, but you got the real him in private, and you paid the ultimate price, of course. He's a coward, you know that?
Oh, he is a coward. I mean, one night when he wasn't with me, because I preferred to go with my own, because he's like, he'd sit there all night, he wouldn't talk to people, pure ignorance, you know? He'd just stare at people coming in and out. And in one night when I was out, he was down around the corner watching us from the street. Myself and my sister, when we'd go for a cigarette, he'd be down watching us.
Good God almighty, the nightmares. You never actually knew what potentially was going to happen next. You were planning to break away, though, weren't you? You were planning to start a new life.
I just wanted one night a week out with my family. That's all I wanted. And that's what I'm doing still.
I don't know, were you planning to leave him, divorce him?
No, I was just literally waiting for him to die.
Okay.
Literally waiting for him to die, because he's got a lot of illnesses as well.
Well, all he said, I'm told in court, was, "I had a domestic with my wife. That's all I had. This is my first time in court." So he doesn't even.
I didn't kill anyone. It was a domestic. He must have had a domestic by himself because I was asleep.
But like, he doesn't even seem to grasp the seriousness of what he did.
No,
you know,
he never does. He never. He's impulse. He does stuff without thinking. He'll just do it. He thinks he'd get away with anything. He's one of those people that get away with anything.
And also, in court, there was some kind of an apology or a letter of apology, or I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What do you make of, do you find that insulting, or what?
Yeah, it was. I think he wrote it about a year and a half ago. I never seen it. I'd never heard about it happening yesterday myself. Sorry what he done. He's not sorry. The man is not sorry. He's planned things. He's never sorry for anything. He'll be sorry if he thinks he'll get his way. That's the only way he'll be sorry. I say I'm sorry and I'll go home.
But you're a child. A child would hardly behave like that. Never mind a grown man. Saying I'm sorry and hopefully he'll get a slap
on
the hand.
When the people go to court, I'm sorry. Lighter sentence.
Lighter sentence. Reduces the sentence. Mm-hmm. And it usually does, actually, to be quite honest with you.
Yes, it does. So, I'm after being caught now so long over the last 2 years, I've seen people walk out when they're in college. Oh, and my mother is this, my mother has cancer, and my disabled child, and this.
Well,
you know,
he's lucky he didn't get a longer sentence for saying, "I killed nobody, it was just a domestic with my wife."
Yeah.
It's a wonder that he didn't get the full 15 years for that alone.
I mean, how could it be a domestic when I was in bed asleep for over 2 hours, and I was after coming home literally at 3:05, and I was in bed and all by 3:10. How could that be a domestic?
Boiling
when
water.
When I came home on a Sunday night, I would go to bed straight away.
Yeah, yeah. What was the recovery in the CUH like? Was it long, slow, and torturous?
Yeah, I was down in the accident and emergency, I'm not sure how many days, and then they moved me to a smaller room, and then they moved me in upstairs, and I was in a room on my own, way down the back of the corridor. And any time I heard a door banging outside, I'd literally jump with fright. You know, the staff up there were very good. They put towels and stuff over the doors so I wouldn't hear them closing. And I begged them to go back down to D&E. I didn't want to be there on my own.
I just wanted to be around where
I was safe.
But how are you coping with the trauma and the PTSD afterwards?
I'll just take them one day at a time. That's like a Monday at a time. It's with me every night when I go to bed. That's why I'm doing that thing to go to sleep. Something else is in my brain.
You have your own little mantra. And do you? I know that there's an order against him to stay away from you, when he comes out of prison, if he comes out of prison.
Yeah, for 12 years.
For 12 years. How do you feel about that, if he were to breach that?
I'm just hoping he won't ever come out of there. I'm looking forward for him to pass away there.
Yeah.
No matter how it's done.
But even if he does, now everybody knows the real Noel Toomey, and your friends and family will be keeping a very close watch on you.
All the people, all my neighbours up here, they're all looking out for me. They're all very good. All the youngsters hanging around, they're all like, if he gets out, you let us know. And he won't be near entering Knocknaheeny.
And finally, is it like there's a weight off your shoulders to some extent that you can now get on with your life, your new life, your happier life?
The weight was taken off when he actually went into prison. But it's finally off now that I've got a sentence. I can try to leave it go now. I can finally start to leave it go now.
And start to live a happier life.
Yeah.
Okay. I wish you all of the very best with that. You deserve it. So what's important now is you, your life, your happiness, and those of your family and your friends. That's what's important now. Enjoy life.
I'm just so happy I'm able to go to once a week with my sister and my brother.
Well, you enjoy every minute of it.
I take the rest of the week just to recover with pain and stuff like that, so I can just do it again next Sunday.
Keep doing
and
that.
And I'm happy with that. I'm happy that way.
Well, stay happy. And thanks so much for chatting with us, Jackie.
Thank you very much, Dean.
Take care of yourself.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Thank you, Jackie, for speaking so openly on air. And let me give out some helpline numbers, because some people will be triggered by that, or indeed could be stuck in situations not dissimilar to Jackie's. There is, of course, Women's Aid on 1-800-341-900. Women's Aid, 1-800-341-900. That is a 24-hour free phone helpline, which you can literally pick up and somebody will listen. They've heard it before. Don't worry about making the call. One Stop Shop on Leaside, the resource for women who have suffered sexual and domestic abuse, is on 1-800-497-497. That's the OSS Cork service, 1-800-497-497. I actually met Jackie in Cork City Council a few months back, Neil, when she was going through the courts, and she actually showed me pictures of herself after this attack. I was completely traumatized for her. What a cruel, evil thing to do. What a lovely, strong woman. I'm so glad he got time for it. She deserves to have peace in her life and home now. The pictures I saw of her injuries were horrific. I sent her love and prayers. Yes, I've seen the pictures as well, and you are right, they are horrific. Please put up helpline numbers after this brave woman's interview. Thank you, Jim. I've given those out. Thank you for that. My heart goes out to Jackie. Please tell her that she can apply to the Criminal Injuries Compensation Tribunal for compensation as a result of the attack and him now being convicted. Most people aren't aware of that scheme. Morning, Neil. Jackie Toomey has shown women it's never too late to walk. I'm so happy for her. Jackie, wear your dresses and live your life free now. You're an inspiration, and we're all behind you, says Mary with a love heart. And Marie in Clon says, listening to that woman, one thing comes to mind. Why did she stay there with that man? I knew a woman in the same situation, but he wasn't half as bad. She had 8 children. She went to London and bit by bit took the 8 children over, and they lived a lovely life away from him, and she never regretted it. She was not going to live this miserable life with this man. So why did she stay? I would be afraid when he gets out of prison. And now she is telling everyone on the radio. It's sad, really, says Marie from Clon. Some people find it very cleansing and empowering, actually, to tell their story. And I like to give opportunities to people to do just that. But can I just say, this question of why did women stay, or why do you stay? That, to be honest with you, is victim blaming. And we should have no actual truck with that in society at all. Like, if you've got an abusive and coercive partner, right? Over time, slowly, but, and this is textbook stuff, time after time after time with cases like this, it's the same textbook roadmap that is used by the abusive partner. So they rob you of everything, right? Including, to be honest with you, including the ability and the confidence to get away and walk away. Even that's taken from you, the ability to walk. So you're mentally and physically trapped, and you're robbed of confidence. You're a shell. You're a wreck. You're living in fear. There's threats to kill you if you do, or harm the children, and all sorts of stuff is used like that. I hope that explains it somewhat. is because I don't think it's fair to say, you know, why did you stay? It's not as simple as that. It really and truly is far from as straightforward as that. Tony says, heartbroken listening to that lady now after being beaten and having boiling water thrown over her. I think he should have boiling water thrown over him, see what he feels like it. I always believe in an eye for an eye. It's an absolute disgrace, and he's a disgrace and shouldn't even be called a man, says Tony in Douglas. So keep those coming, text 0868 104 106. And Kevin has another one. Feel sorry for her, sure, absolutely. But for 43 years, come on, you could have left at any time. I hope I've explained, Kevin, as to the reasons why it's not that straightforward. I mean, if it were that straightforward and you were thinking straight and you had your mental faculties about you, after years and years of abuse, don't you think that people would, if they could? I'm not suggesting that some don't, but it's not that straightforward. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106 and we'll pick it up after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Now, I want to take some time out to catch up on texts from different topics of conversation, certainly from this morning's conversation with Jackie. Very bravely coming on air to tell her story. The people saying, why didn't she leave, have zero understanding of the control these men hold over their wives and partners. Well said, well said. Do not want to speak, please, but I am a father of two young children and I'm living in hell with my own wife. She belittles me so much in private and says I'm useless or can't be trusted to do anything or be a man. She publicly makes me out to be no good. I hate my life, can't leave simply because of my children. I always continually just feel so low because of it. Well, that is very, very sad. And it's an indicator as well that it's not always men against women. Sometimes it can be the other way around. And unfortunately, it's the threat of losing your children or indeed losing access to your children to make that first step. I'm assuming that you have tried to talk to her, because perhaps it would be fair to say this was not the person that you married. So something over time has changed her. And it's her has changed, of course, not you. I mean, like, you do have a life to live and you're entitled and deserve to be happy. It would be great if it's irretrievably broken down for you to be able to try and find the courage. I don't even know if the courage is the right word. But the ability to move on with your life and you know, maybe get help in that regard. Men's Aid are a great number that you might want to call. And they are dealing with stories like yours. No story's 100% the same, but there are particular patterns and boxes that are ticked time and time again. So www.mensaid.ie, or you can simply pick up the phone. And you know what? You might feel better after the phone call, my friend. It's an 01 number, 554-3811. So 01-55-43-811. I hope that helps. Morning, Neil. This is a short text. My son is in a very toxic relationship for 20 years. Okay, well, perhaps you might slip him that phone number. There would be help in sharing. You never know. Why did she stay is making me so bloody angry. My reply is, take off your judgy hat and show some empathy. How dare anyone judge when they have never walked a second in another person's shoes? The world would be a better place if we showed kindness to survivors instead of questioning their actions or lack of actions throughout their living hell. I'm wishing Jackie the very best for the future, says Louise. Thank you for that. Well said. Keep those texts coming. Text 0868 104 106. Meanwhile, I mean, just a quick one on Seamus Culleton. John suggests that he thinks that Seamus Culleton shouldn't be left back into Ireland. We're deporting people for crimes, aren't we? He is a criminal, should not be accepted back here. He did morally wrong by his children as well. The only thing I could say about that is that he has cases to answer in Ireland. Innocent until proven guilty is the correct mantra on that one. I'm not so sure what will happen next, because his lawyer has a stay on his deportation. And then, of course, a lot to do then with, I don't know what people call it, unruly behaviour, antisocial behaviour. Thuggery is a word I would use. Feral youths, certainly in the last couple of days, featured on the air. So much so, here's a typical example of how they can impact on people. I'm just so disappointed that the Douglas Open Library closed and will close every evening. I live alone, don't drink, so enjoy going to that library. I was in there yesterday and two thugs were causing havoc. Security had to be called. It's absolutely awful. So that's a typical example of how the behaviour of some can impact on others. And of course, there are issues with regards to the library in Douglas Village Shopping Centre and the carry on of some people. I work on a takeaway in Cork City. We had an incident a few weeks ago and I was talking to a guard about a girl who was almost robbed. The guard I was speaking to said that there are actually areas of Cork City where the guards won't go unless they have armed support units with them. Meanwhile, the council gives thousands for renovations and it feels like the people running the country are turning a blind eye to what's happening. I'm not quite sure how the council point on renovations actually features. I think you're saying that on another topic that there's unbelievable waste in this country. I was listening to your conversation about knives and knife crime in Cork and I can't forget about that handsome lad who was stabbed 2 years ago in a house on Bandon Road while he was trying to act as the peacemaker. His family's life is ruined forever with the loss of their beautiful son. I can't even remember what the sentence the man who carried out the stabbing received, but now 2 years later, we're still talking about this issue and it sounds like it's gotten worse, says Tony, with regards to knife crime. My son is 16. He won't even go into town because of troublemakers. That's the only word for them. They terrorize other young teenagers. Last year, on the night of his junior cert results, my son didn't even go out. He said it wasn't worth it because these characters always show up. And they did show up, apparently, carrying what looked like a machete. Come on, where are the guards when this is happening? Sometimes it feels like the guards don't want to be dealing with people like this either, as they could be end up targeted themselves. I'm lucky my son plays a lot of sport, soccer, football and hurling, and prefers training and matches to hanging around. But even so, he should be able to go into town for a stroll or something to eat without worrying about being attacked. Don't give up my details. I certainly won't. Thank you for the text. I would love if we could create a society where we actually supported and got behind our guards more, as it's not that easy or straightforward to be in all places at all times. But thanks for the text nonetheless. They are ruthless because they have no concept of the consequence of their actions. So they terrorize at will, but if someone raises a hand to them, then the wheels of justice are turned on them. The Irish government needs to punish and be allowed to punish. It seems like as if they hate the Irish people, we're being replaced anyway. It's an interesting observation. Irish people need to stop and get this government out and maybe elect a government that loves and cares for Irish people. Mick says there is a force available to the Gardaí in Ireland called the Defence Forces. They're underpaid, highly skilled and disciplined. I don't know why they're not deployed to back up Gardaí, particularly at weekends. A uniformed support presence assisting Gardaí patrolling the streets. We had it in the 70s and the 80s for bank and security operations. Way back in the day, there was a lot of banks being hit by different organisations who were looking for funding at the time. Anyway, so they were robbing banks. So why not use them again as backup? I'm sure they'd appreciate the extra income. Those within the Defence Forces, their pay is poor. I'm not suggesting give them powers of arrest. Just have them as a visible uniform support presence to free up more Gardaí on foot patrol. We should have national service. Maybe even start with young people that are already in jail. Most of them are in there anyway because they fell by the wayside. Feels like society is falling apart. At the moment, prisons seem to be the only punishment available and many people feel that that's not working. So why not at least trial another option with military service, especially if they're actively recruiting, and lower the age of responsibility? It's quite low anyway, I think. In some cases, it could be somewhere between, it's either 14 or 16. I think it might even be as low as 14. One practical way to stop underage thuggery is to fine them heavily and take their child benefit from their parents, including the court costs, the damages to property, says Kieran. Tony says a 2-year stint in the army boot camp should be compulsory in Ireland for all lads and girls from the age of 16. This would absolutely put manners and respect on them from a younger age. It took the death of a 16-year-old girl in Dublin killed by a scrambler before legislation was introduced to make it illegal to drive scramblers on the streets. Are we now going to wait until some young boy or girl is seriously beaten or killed by thugs before something is done? Use CCTV and any evidence available to secure convictions. The problem with it is if you have to rely, as the texter says, solely on a young victim making a statement, that could leave them open to further intimidation and trouble. And that's why young people who are attacked or violently assaulted don't want to make statements, because they feel it could only make it worse for them. And then I came across an interesting one then with regards to, and I think this is probably from the greater Douglas area, two different emails at the same time, quite short. I know this topic's been covered by you in the recent past with regards to scramblers and e-scooters. Just passed through Douglas, a worrying amount of young boys of various ages between 10 and 15, it's midterm at the moment, isn't it? They're gathering around scramblers and electric scooters. Some have helmets on the ready for the off. One fella had his face covered and was weaving in and out of traffic. Tóca Gardaí aware of a few instances in the Douglas area. And a second one there as well. What's wrong with people at all? Just after coming out of Douglas, and these fellas were on the road acting the maggot. One fella up on one wheel while they were filming him on a scrambler. The height of blackguarding on a public road where anything could happen. In actual fact, I was also sent photographs of that on the South Ring Road, just outside of Douglas. So keep them coming. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. We got Jim standing by. I'll talk to Laura if you don't mind, actually. This is off topic, but it certainly would be of interest to you. Laura, good morning. Where were you? Laura, can you hear me all right? Okay, not right now. Okay, let's take a break, see if we can sort out the lines after this.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Okay, I get back to texts and comments, but all sorted now. Laura, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
Was this a trip to the Three Arena, was it?
Yeah, I went to the Deftones on Monday night, just gone, and we were up at the kiosk getting some soft drinks or whatever.
Coke, I think. Was it a bottle of Coke?
Yeah, Coke, bottle of Coke. Yeah, exactly. And when we paid for it, they were charging us 50 cents for the deposit, the return scheme deposit.
Okay, so was that 50 or 15?
15 cents, the normal 15 cents. Okay. But then they wouldn't give us the bottles then. They insisted on putting it into a plastic glass because they said that because it was a metal concert, that they weren't allowed to give out the bottles that could be used as a weapon.
Why? So because people who go to a metal gig are violent or troublesome,
oh,
is it?
Oh, sure, of course. Oh, yeah. Of course, sure. Yeah. I mean, I've been to loads of numerous gigs, but it only seems to be at metal gigs.
So if it was a Daniel O'Donnell gig, like, they wouldn't be having that conversation with you.
Sure, I went to Biffy Clyro last month and there was no issue. We were given the bottles. There was no problem. So I asked why was I paying the 15 cents if they weren't going to give me the bottle. And they said that that was nothing to do with them, that that was part of the system. They couldn't take the 15 cent off the price. But I asked, why was I being charged the 15 cent for the bottle that I couldn't take? And then they were going to return the bottle as well. So basically, essentially make 30 cents on the bottle.
Yeah, they were charging you for it. And then they'd get a refund of it.
Taking it off me. Yeah, and then they were taking it off me because it's a weapon, and keeping my 15 cent and getting 15 cent for them recycling it.
Oh, that's a matter for the ombudsman, I'd say. You need to complain. Yeah. That's not right. It's also very insulting to metalheads.
Yeah. And also as well, like I said, can you not just take the lid off the bottle? Because that's normal. Like, that's why it's a weapon, because you can close the lid and it's a heavy object. But I was like, can you not just take the lid off and give me the bottle? They were like, no, it has to be in a plastic cup. I was like, okay.
It's not right, though. It's not right on a load of different levels.
I think it's a bit Irish. Yeah. No, but like, where's all that money going, Neil? They're already charging me 15 cents. So like, for all, like, what was there, 10,000 people at the gig? What are they doing with all the different bottles and cans, you know, that people paid for? Like, where's all that money going that they're getting back for the deposit?
Well, they're getting 15 cents out of Oh, yeah. Interesting. I wonder. Yeah. We'll have to ask them as to whether or not they pass it on to
And another thing I noticed as well was there was full body searches being carried out on everybody at the gig. But like, I was at Biffy Clyro last month, that didn't happen. But then I was at a heavy metal gig again in October for Disturbed, and they were doing a full body search. So they seem to be very selective of what gigs they do, like a full body search. And the same with whether or not you can have a bottle or not, you know, as in the plastic bottle, whether or not they'll take it off you or you can keep it. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, so the bottle issue is important, of course, right? And it's not fair on consumers 100%. And punters. But this body search, what are they, are they looking for? If you go to a metal gig, a heavy metal gig or a full on big rock gig, are they looking for weapons?
Well, I don't know. Are they people smuggling drink? I really don't know. But like, I just don't know, why is it only for certain gigs? And, you know, like, why isn't it like across the board if it's a safety thing? you know, why isn't it across the board for all the gigs? Why
have they had trouble in the past then with certain genres?
I've gone to numerous concerts over the years in Tree Arena, lots of different types of comedies, like, you know, pop music, everything. And the only time I've ever gotten frisked or body searched was for heavy metal gigs. It just seems to be the last couple I've gone to, they've started to do that. So I don't know, is there some sort of a breach of safety or was there an issue or I don't know.
Okay, because we were chatting about this earlier on this morning, and one of the lads was suggesting that sometimes people do throw full bottles unopened onto the stage or at the musicians or there have been situations in the past where there have been people on stage, not even necessarily, it could be a comedian or something. And it's a problem.
You know, when you go to the marquee, like before, like all this thing came in with the return thing, before they used to just open the bottle, take the lid and give you the bottle open. Like the issue is the lid, to be able to close the lid and then it's full and you can throw it. But like, I mean, all you have to do is take the lid off. You don't need to take the full bottle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, anything can be a weapon, you know, anything can, like a runner. You know what I mean? Anything could be a weapon. Like,
but there's been history though. Like Justin Bieber was hit by a water bottle during a gig in Brazil. Cardi B had fans throwing numerous bottles at her, caused long delays. And even going way back, I can remember the Smiths were pelted with bottles and other items on stage.
But
sometimes they just end the show.
Yeah, but if it's a safety thing, then Neil, why is it only for certain concerts then that they will allow the bottles and other ones they won't?
Yeah, I know. I mean, you think that a Harry Styles concert would be calm enough, but Harry Styles was hit by a water bottle. This was like 8 years ago.
Yeah, but I just think as well, it's a bit Irish as well. Like they're charging 15 cent because they say, you know, it's for the bottle, whatever, but then they won't give you the bottle. So they're keeping the 15 cent as well. I just don't think it's right. I mean, let's be honest. If we go to a gig, chances are, even if I buy the bottles, am I going to bring them home? Probably not. But it'd be nice to know, like, where are they going to go? Like, you know, it should be my choice whether I want to take the bottle or not. The choice is taken away from me. And I was charged 15 cent as well for the luxury.
Did you send me the screen grab of the Fanta Lemon 360 and the...
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, just to show you, because I asked for a receipt and they asked me, what did I want a receipt for? And I said, I can ask for a receipt if I want, but they only gave me the Visa debit receipt. Like they wouldn't give me the itemized receipt. And I did say to them, why are you charging me 15 cent if you're taking the bottle off me? And they were like, we can't override the system. It's part of the system. But I said, you shouldn't be charging me for it if you won't let me have the bottle.
No, there's all of that. You're right. Yeah. You are right in that way. And you were right to stand your ground.
The thing is, this happened at another gig, you see, in October. And that's why I was like, no, where's all that money going? Like how many people are at that gig? How much money are they making as it is anyway? Do you know what I mean? And then I just thought, like, I know it's only 15 cent and people are like, oh, is she for real? But if you add up all those 15 cents, like, why can't they donate that to a charity? Why can't the people that are organising the gig, why can't they, musicians, like, pick a charity and be like, right, so we're not allowed to have bottles, so you pay for the bottles, whatever. Why can't they donate that money to a charity? Why does it have to line the pockets to Tree Arena? Like,
I agree. And listen, I'm not taking from that, but the discrimination about certain gigs as well is another point you made, as in, you know, it seems to be metal gigs.
I just noticed it just happened, like, because we only went to Biffy Clyro last month, and that would be considered a rock, like an easy going gig, whatever.
Yeah.
And there was no issues, like, everyone was allowed to have bottles, or, like, you know, from the kiosk or whatever. There was no issue at all. But then suddenly, because it's a certain genre of music, then straight away they're like, oh no, like, there's no bottles allowed, but, you know. And I mean, if it's for safety, it should be safety across the board. It shouldn't be nitpicking at certain gigs. Like, it should be either there's bottles allowed or there's not allowed for whatever reason, you know.
Here's a bizarre one for you, right? I'd like to share my disappointment with the restaurant in Cork Airport. I tried to cash in my deposit receipts after I had breakfast. Yeah. And I was told that I'd need to buy something again so the value could be deducted off the bill. Is this correct procedure? I was under the impression that stores are required to give the cash back. It's not about the cash, really, though. It's the principle. We bought breakfast in the store, bought drinks. Mm. This is a Cork Airport. Mm-hmm. Went to the trouble of using the return vending machine outside the store in the waiting area. Returned to the store with the receipts. Had to wait at the till for a manager to come out, who in turn told me I needed to buy something.
To get back money off it.
They had already had breakfast.
That's a bit Irish now, Neil. A bit Isn't Irish. It? Yeah, but I actually did report like this thing with the 15 cent thing back in October to the return. I know you think, God, she's anal now, but I did. I got onto them. I emailed them to say like what's going on there. And they said, oh, like they shouldn't be doing that and we'll follow it up for you. But there was nothing followed up. And I contacted them then again yesterday to say the same thing was happening at this gig. And because I had the receipt and the screen grab, then they were able to do a proper incident and a case number.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I just think it's the principle. I know it's only 15 cent, but it's not 15 cent. I should be able to do
well
it
done
what
for
I want,
standing
you know?
Up. We want more of that. People
sure
should
look.
Push back. They really should. Okay, I'll be checking with the Three Arena to see. No, first world problems, but it annoyed you, and you were right to say something.
Oh, it did, 100%. Yeah.
All right, 100%. Nice one. Take care. Thanks for that,
thanks,
Laura.
Neil,
actually,
care.
That other email that I referred to, Cork Airport. She said, Colin is something on behalf of himself and his son. He says, I was with my 11-year-old son, who in turn chuckled and said, "How much of a scam this is." I'd like to reply as to what the rules are around the deposit scheme. If you think about it, 3 million people travelled through Cork Airport in 1 year. If half of the people bought a drink and were unable to claim the deposit back, it adds up to a lot more than a few cent, I can tell you. That makes no sense. You had breakfast, you bought drinks with it, ate the breakfast, got the bottles, went down to the vending machine, got the receipt for it, tried to get your money back, and you were told when you went back up you have to buy something. That's nonsense. Like, absolute nonsense. But on top of everything else then, it's kind of the discrimination against maybe heavy metal fans. But at a Guns N' Roses gig, the band was booed and had plastic bottles thrown at them in Dublin after Axl Rose arrived nearly an hour late. You got to turn up on time. But apparently Rose threatened to stop the show saying, "One more bottle and we go home." Anyway, keep them coming. Text 0868104106 to the phone lines. James, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. It's Ash Wednesday, the start of Lent.
We're in Conny Dodger season.
Okay, explain Conny Dodger to people, will you?
Conny Dodger, so back in the early 60s. It originated in Cork City amongst staff of several offices where they were giving up sweets for Lent or biscuits or whatever like. But there was some confectionery in Cork City came up with something in between, something like a marshmallow, and they christened it a Conny Dodger.
And do you know the reason why it was called Conny?
Conny Lucy was the bishop at the time.
That's right.
Conny Lucy confirmed me in 1955. No, that I'm a bit long in the tooth now.
Yeah, you're not at all. You're only young at heart. So Conny Dodgers were named after Bishop Conny Lucy, who said for Lent, you could have only one meal and two collations, they were called.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, so the two collations would be a tiny little nibble twice a day. So some restaurant, I think it might have been the Green Door Cake Shop in Patrick's here or something. They came up with a massive biscuit.
Yeah, Conny Dodger. And it lived on to this day, but I presume that the present generation wouldn't have heard anything about that, you know.
Well, they probably would know very little about Lenten fasting, you know, or, you know, eating frugal meals for 40 days. Do they even give things up anymore for Lent, I'm curious?
I don't think they do, no.
No?
No. I don't think a lot of them wouldn't even know what Lent is, know what that means.
I think that there's a bit of a return to the church and to Mass and to Catholicism, I think, though. Do you not think, James?
Yeah, maybe. Gradually, I'd say. Presume it'll come back gradually. Yeah.
So they created these massive, big, huge biscuits the size of a tea plate that were called Conny Dodgers. So did you have your first confession then with Conny Lucy as well? Yeah.
Oh, it was one of the curates in Clonakilty.
And what about your confirmation? Did you take the pledge?
I did, but unfortunately, it went out the window in a short time after.
What? You were only a child. What did you do?
I suppose you could go sampling.
What's that?
You take a sample of something that you're offered, and if you liked it, you might indulge further.
And who gave you that? Adults, is it?
Some fella maybe 3 years older.
All right. Okay. How long did you last on the pledge? Did you make 16, 17?
I'd say about 17, yeah.
All right. Okay. Did you develop a lip for it then?
No, I did for a while, but after that, I saw the light.
You gave it up. It's a bad job. It's just that Mike says to me, I was talking about taking the pledge the other day. He sent me a text, said, Neil, when we made our confirmation, most of us drank 5 to 6 pints. The kids back then could hold their drink.
Oh, but I heard of a story where, you see, that time back, say 60, 70 years ago, if you were in a certain standard of catechism, you did failure in the confirmation examination,
oh,
you know.
Jesus.
But I heard of one guy, he was failed in an outside parish, and he had to come into our parish for Christian doctrine from a teacher. And the teacher happened to be an alcoholic. And after giving him an hour of Christian doctrine schooling, they'd go to the bar. And the pupil would drink 2 pints with the teacher. And he hadn't his confirmation got it all.
Oh, God. He got off to a very bad start. Oh, God almighty. All right.
But, before you go, you see, there's a lot of old phrases, and they're buried forever, that the young crowd would never, you know, they wouldn't even listen now to, you know, what the old folks are saying.
Why do you say that? You're making them out to be a bad lot.
I recall my mother, my late mother. She was in a bar in Roscarbery 100 years ago, and this guy has come in, married man who was childless. But when he had a few scoops in, he used to always say to my mother, I cast in matrimonial waters and I fished without success.
As in he never met and married a wife.
Yeah.
There's one thing for sure anyway, we should listen to senior citizens and listen to their stories. One of the greatest regrets is I didn't pay more attention.
There's a wealth of information gone to the grave.
There is, my friend. There is, my friend. Never a truer word.
We never listen, you know.
And come here, do you put on a bit of ash on your forehead for Ash Wednesday?
Oh, yeah.
Have you always done that?
Yeah, I have. I've seen a few miracles in my time, actually.
Get away. Do tell.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah. Oh, I have. I've seen miracles in my time. I'd say I will take them to the grave with me.
Will you? Okay, you're going to keep the miracles to yourself, are you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No bit of encouragement will bring the miracles out to the light of day, no?
No, I've no doubt, but there is a life hereafter.
All right, well, fair play to you. I'm delighted for you. That's a wonderful thing to have, that belief.
Yeah.
And so, did you go to Mass this morning and get the ash put on this morning, is it, or what?
No, I'm going into Mass now in a nursing home here in Bush Mountain Clan.
Fair play to you, James.
At 11 o'clock, yeah.
Well, all the best. I won't keep you. Have a good day.
Yeah, okay. Okay, Neil, thanks.
Appreciate
bye-bye. Thank you very
take
much.
Take care.
Thank
so, you. Ash Wednesday today, the start of Lent. It's the time when, I suppose, people are thinking about giving things up or changing things or making improvements in their life. Or, you know, Lent really would have been at a time, like for Pancake Tuesday really had more to do with getting rid of everything in the cupboards way back in the day. You know, things that would be perishable, for instance, like flour and milk and eggs and stuff like that. Because Lent then would be a very Spartan time for like 40 days. But not too far from me, actually, right across the glass there, there's a woman who's given up the drink. You're giving up the drink, lads. Today's the first day of the challenge, 40 days with no Prosecco or champagne or sex on the beach or
that's me.
Espresso martinis.
Yeah, that's me. I've said it live on air now. No. Well, if I am, I'm having alcohol-free beer.
See, the minute we decide our Christmas party's on Friday, would you believe it?
Well, you've left it too late now. Come on, that ship has sailed. I can't keep saying, oh, this is coming up, that is coming up. So I have a kind of a nice stretch now of nothing happening.
Oh, you're just going to be a... Yo, isn't it amazing? We automatically, people automatically then would be... Are you on edge if you went out with somebody and they said, I'm not drinking tonight? Do people get the hump over that?
I think it's on the circumstances. Like if you were just going out with one person and you were due to go out drinking or on a night and they decided last minute they weren't, I would get the hump a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I'd have no issue if you were going out with a group and, you know, I wouldn't get the hump, but it changes things. Like you might just go for dinner instead. Like if, you know, you're not going to go out and go up for a night in the pubs and club or whatever and not, you know, and see the steady decline of yourself while your friend is sitting
the problem is you don't notice them. Your own steady decline.
You're a bit more aware of it, though.
That's it. Well, you know, when I was pregnant, I was never so aware of it because obviously I wasn't drinking. And, you know, the odd night I'd go out for a family event or whatever, and I was like, oh, my God, am I actually like this? Am I actually like them when I'm drinking?
So if you went out with somebody and they arrived and said, listen, I'm not drinking, I'm driving, or I just want to take a break, and somebody gets annoyed about it, or, you know, privately annoyed in their own head or whatever, or starts to try and encourage the other person. I just have one. Oh, come on, you'll spoil the night. It's saying more about you, really, than anything else, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, obviously, the PC thing to say is, no, no, I'm delighted for you. Well done. You know, you're a great person, way better than me. I won't be giving up. I'm giving up the kids for Lent, actually.
That's it, to farm them out.
I swear to God, they're at home at the moment for midterm, and I'm going to be dug out of them.
So why are you stopping for Lent?
Do you know what? I actually find since kind of mid-40s, it's really, really hard to recover from drink. And I don't drink every day, but I'm like, when I go socialising or whatever, I have, like, I drink, and I probably drink more than what I should.
Yeah.
Like, I think the limit, like, when you're perimenopause is about 4 drinks, but anything after that, I am dying.
But what if you just drank beer?
I'd maybe, but you know what? I just actually.
Well, if you want to do it, but like if you're drinking high octane alcohol.
You're trying to talk me around since.
Oh, for God's sake, I am.
I can't believe you've said it on air because you didn't tell me at all. I'm distraught here.
No,
sadly, she did mention it to me.
If I have to be accountable, you see. So I'm like, if I can't do 40 days, there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah.
And then let's review it after that.
Okay. Okay. You know? Well, let's.
And it's, you know what? It's really expensive as well. And I've a lot going on this year with like weddings and holidays and stuff. And. Like, I never give out about money now, but I have to say, like, it is an insane amount for...
So you obviously sat down and done the maths on it as well as everything else.
You know, you're kind of like aimlessly, like, just having drinks then. You're
Neil
like,
will be paying
God.
For a drink on Friday.
All right. You see, this is a slippery slope.
No, I don't want to be talking... Listen, I'm not. I'm only winding you up, to be honest with you. I mean, like, in fairness, you know, you'll go for it, 100%. And this is day one, so we'll maybe check in again.
Yeah, on Friday, let's do it.
Tomorrow.
I know the kids on the midterm isn't helping. Actually, just a funny thing, right, that I kind of cracked yesterday, right? So if Rob was at home with the kids yesterday morning and they were so good, everything was fine, right? I came home and for that little bit of time before he left, they were absolutely feral, like mental. So it's like when we're both there, and this is the way it was at the weekend in London, they crave attention and they go absolutely nuts. And then he left and I was with them for the afternoon and they were fine. So, like,
that's strange,
isn't it?
Yeah, but you did post because you were in London for the weekend.
I swear, I love my kids.
And one of the posts that you put up at the end of the weekend is, if you're thinking of going to London with your family and your young children, don't effing bother.
I know, it was hard work, to be honest. Now we had a
what did you expect?
We had a great time, but like, I suppose when you've been to a city so much with your husband and had a great time over the years, and then you bring the kids, you're like, oh God,
it is a different experience
entirely. Yeah, big time.
All right, text 0868104106. Back after the break. Good luck with that.
Listen to the Neil Prendeville Show wherever you go. Download the Go Loud app. The new home of Red FM.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Well, here's another example then of how supporters or fans could be treated differently at particular gigs or events. Yarick says, I went to a rugby match a while back at the Aviva, a pint at half time, no problem bringing it back into the stadium. A few weeks later, up at a soccer match, no way would they leave us bring a pint in at half time back in to the venue. Plastic bottles, by the way. So is it one rule for rugby toffs and another rule for supposed soccer hooligans? Well, I mean, it would indicate that their fans are treated differently for whatever reason. If you could do it for a rugby match and you couldn't do it for a soccer match, you have to ask the reason why. Anyway, text 0868104106. I've always said it. I've said it many times. Everyone has a story in their life and potentially a book in their life. So there was a girl, a young girl called Ava, was here on work experience at the end of last week. She was here all last week. And at the end of the week then, she brought in an apple tart, and it was absolutely delicious. And it turned out that the apple tart was made by her granddad. And then we got talking to her, and she had a great story to tell about her granddad, Tony Long. So good morning to Tony Long. And I was just very intrigued to find out some more about him. So we got in touch then with Ava's mum, Rachel, and she joins me by phone. She also sent me some great memorabilia regarding her dad, Tony Long. Rachel, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
So, Tony, please pass on our regards to him. Was he a cook and a chef back in the day, was it?
He was, Neil. He was. He was a pastry chef and a chef, yeah. He started out from a very young age. He was about 18 when he started his apprenticeship in Dublin.
Like, it's fair to say, it's probably the nicest apple tart you'll ever eat, right?
Oh, it's fantastic, yeah. He's notorious for it. So he's making it now over 60 years. And, yeah, he gets the orders all the time from the grandkids and all of us. You know, if there's any occasion or there's any thank yous or birthdays or anything, it's the apple tart is what we all request.
And how old would Tony be now?
He's 86 next month.
And he's still baking.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's amazing, yeah.
Is it just the apple tarts or does he turn his hand to anything else?
Oh, anything, yeah. Fabulous roast Sunday dinners, all the pancakes yesterday now and all sorts of pastries. So, he's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
He's an incredible man. So, she was saying last week that he cooked or chefed or baked for Charlie Chaplin at one stage.
He did indeed. It was in the early 60s, Neil, and he was one of the pastry chefs down in Parknessilla in Sneem. And as you probably know, Parknessilla at the time, it was a real holiday retreat for the rich and famous back then.
Yeah.
But I suppose even today it's a beautiful place to visit. It's so scenic. But anyway, Charlie Chaplin was staying there and he requested jam roly-poly, but it wasn't on the menu at the time. So my dad said he'd make it for him. So he did, and he sent it out to him, and he didn't send it back in anyway, so that was a good sign.
He wolfed it. And can you maybe please explain to people, because that is a dessert from, it's a British one really, primarily, it's from a bygone age. What is it?
It is. I suppose to look at it, it looks like a Swiss roll, but it's different. It's made with suet, apparently. It's just a different consistency and texture now to Swiss roll, but it's made with jam. I think he made it with custard as well. And you just kind of roll it out. But as I said, to look at it, it looks like a Swiss roll, really, but it's a little bit different in texture and consistency. It's really old dessert dish now. But he loved it. He loved it. So, yeah, it's his claim to fame that he made roly-poly for Charlie Chaplin.
He's dined out on that for many years since. So Charlie Chaplin did hang around, down around that neck of the woods. He's got a statue up to himself in Waterville because he used to stay in Waterville a lot. And he used to fish in the lakes of Waterville also.
That's right. Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah. It was, he spent many of his holidays, I think, or summers down there over the years, specifically in the 60s, I think.
It was one time, actually, he went in there with his family, by all accounts, and I think they were full or something for Sunday lunch in one of the hotels down there, and they turned him away at the height at the height of his fame. Charlie Chaplin was turned away.
Massive, yeah.
He was a huge superstar. But apparently the owner of the hotel got wind of it as Charlie Chaplin was kind of doing his Charlie Chaplin walk down the front of Waterville, and he ran down after him apologising, and the rest is history. So you sent me on then some copies of menus from 1969, and then you sent me also pages and pages of what would seem like your dad's recipe books. Is that right?
That's it. So it's just we found some old recipe books. He was in Switzerland and Hotel Metropole in Switzerland for 6 months. And, there were some fabulous pastry chefs there. So, you know, he took down a lot of kind of weird and wonderful kind of recipes, really old stuff, you know, that I just thought might be interesting to some people maybe in the business if anyone wanted to have a look and try and maybe recreate any of it. There was a menu there from, I think there was one, it's not from Parknessilla now, it's from one of the Dublin hotels, I think, in the 60s. But it was just, there's some like weird and wonderful stuff on it. Some stuff that has lasted the test of time, I suppose, and some stuff that you'd never see nowadays.
Can you imagine a starter of grapefruit segments?
Yeah.
Wouldn't their right mind would want grapefruit as a starter?
Yeah.
I see him here. You got the roast leg of pork with applesauce, the braised lamb tongue garnie. Is that an actual lamb's tongue?
I think it is. It is, Neil. I think it's braised and boiled or something. I'm not sure.
Okay.
To be honest, half of this stuff I couldn't even understand. I mean, what really drew my attention is the carrageen mould and jam. But apparently it's carrageen moss, is it? Like a seaweed, seaweed that they boil and they,
That's right. Yeah, stewed prunes for dessert.
Yeah. You'd never see that in a hotel menu today.
No, you would not.
In a hospital menu, maybe, but not in a hotel menu.
No, no. Unless you were constipated, maybe.
That's it.
Yeah, and then there's pages and pages of all of it. So you have an entire book of all of his recipes.
Yeah, I think that one was just from when he was in Switzerland. Yeah, so he worked with some fabulous French chefs and South African chefs and that. So, yeah, there's just some stuff in there.
And do you know offhand, did he chef it all around Cork City or any of our own areas?
He in the 80s, he was the pastry chef in the Oyster Tavern. So that was like a great restaurant to be in the 80s. Remember the Oyster?
Oh, my God. You know something? I was in the market last week. I was talking to Tim Mulcahy and his mother, who still works in the Oyster, came over and we were chatting because the Oyster is closed up now. I don't know if they're trying to sell it or rent it out to somebody. But she was talking about the old days in the Oyster. And your dad would have been the pastry chef when she was talking to. It was hugely popular back in the day.
Hugely, yeah.
And every single day it would be jammed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Eddie Barco was the head chef, I think, and dad was the pastry chef. So, yeah, it was very popular among all the Cork business people
and
all
the Oyster Tavern. Yeah. And the staff were supposed to have been absolutely fantastic. And there was all of the great and the good out there. And she was saying to me that some of the biggest money made in the Oyster at the time was people coming from all of the big companies down on the Mall and from the breweries on expense account lunches that would last for like 4 hours.
Yeah, hours. Dad said they'd be hours. And him being the pastry chef, he'd be the last one out.
He'd be the last one.
Having to do desserts, they'd be ordering baked Alaska at 11 o'clock at night and things like that. So,
Did you ever eat there?
No, I don't remember ever eating there. No. Sure, like we had it at home. Sure, he served us up at home when he could. So, like, we were spoiled really growing up. But we didn't. But I know years later when it closed down and then it reopened there years ago, my brothers, they took him in, you know, a bit of nostalgia to see, brought him back in for dinner. But I don't think he was too happy.
It was all changed at that stage.
It wasn't the same. Everything had changed. Everything had changed.
I mean, I remember walking in there once for some reason, and I would have been old enough. I just don't know why I didn't. I really regret not having done it because it really was a piece of Cork history that's now gone.
It
was just massively popular. Perfect. People would say that you'd go in, like families, say, for instance, would book a table Christmas week or whatever, or Christmas Eve. And then when they're leaving, they'd book for next Christmas Eve, and year in, year out, they'd have the same booking and everything in the Oyster.
Oh, yeah, it was the place to go, all right. It was very popular, yeah.
I'm just looking at the menu again. I don't know why they wouldn't want it to roast a chicken. The menu you sent to me here is boiled chicken with parsley sauce. Yuck!
I know.
Anyway, will you pass on our kindest regards to your dad, Tony Long?
I will indeed. Thanks very much, Neil.
Take care, Rachel. All the best.
Take care. Bye-bye.
In fact, his book of recipes, and she sent me photographs of some of the pages, that's an historic document now. And I'd say there's a lot of chefs out there would like to have a little peruse through those pages and those recipes because things have changed very much since then. Text 0868 104106. Back after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. You can text 0868 104 106. If you can't jump on the air, you can always send a voice note. It's the same text line, but on WhatsApp to 0868 104 106. So get involved in the conversation. Amongst other things, between now and midday, Pat Short in studio. Pat and Faye Short are playing the Opera House on the 6th of March. You can book tickets directly, corkoperahouse.ie. But I'll also have 3 pairs of tickets to give away for the Opera House show between now and midday when Pat Short pops into studio. Happy to update with regards to Greg, who was on air yesterday, 83 years old Greg, who was refused cash top-up in Vodafone. He's always done that way. He doesn't have a debit card. He doesn't have a credit card. He likes to use cash. So we got in touch with Vodafone, and I'm kind of still as bewildered with regards to the response from Vodafone. Essentially, they're saying to me that they have operated primarily as cashless since 2020. And they'd say for a lot of different reasons, because of digital and card-based methods, and it streamlines things. Not taking cash means they improve security and things like that. But they did say, for those unable to pay digitally, or those that prefer cash, To support these customers, Vodafone does accept cash payments in certain circumstances across their shops, particularly for services such as mobile top-ups. So that's the response, that in certain circumstances, particularly with regards to mobile phone top-ups, they accept cash. But that was not the case when Greg went into his own Vodafone shop, I think, was it Carrigaline, I believe? And he was refused a top-up because he only had cash. So I don't know, is the message out there to staff if Vodafone's policy is, in certain circumstances, to accept cash? And maybe they should send out the memo to all shops to say, you know, in certain circumstances, use your common sense and judgment and take cash. With regards to Jackie Toomey at the hands of her husband, Noel Toomey, shocking as it was what that woman endured from that monster, it seems that if he'd murdered her, he would have escaped with perhaps a shorter sentence, like 5.5 years, that the Romanian man got for the death of the Canadian tourist in Dublin. Is that what a life is worth? And what message does a sentence of 5.5 years send out? You are right. Yonad Danka was sentenced to 5.5 years in prison. For anyone staying, and that would seem very short, wouldn't it? For anyone staying for the sake of your children, what are you teaching your children? That this kind of behaviour is acceptable? I left a very toxic husband 9 years ago. I have two sons who are absolute gentlemen. It damages the kids more by actually staying. Yes, and I'm delighted that you managed to get away and you have a happier life and your kids are thriving. But it's not possible for all. It really and truly isn't. And well, that is your story, and it's a lovely end to the story following years of abuse. It's not that straightforward, as I've said on a number of occasions already this morning. And then on the whole aspect of people who just don't feel safe, I don't think I've seen as many texts in a while now with regards to one topic of conversation that started on Monday. Go into Lidl in Churchfield, go into Supervalue, go into Apple Green on the north side around 8 p.m. any evening. And you'll see it. You'll meet this particular group of youths that you've been talking about, terrorizing the areas. They've been absolutely terrorizing the north side for years, and the guards would appear powerless to deal with them. There's about three separate groups, but they converge when they need to close ranks. It's disgusting to watch them operate. There's one ringleader that has control of all of the groups. In town with my six-year-old on Saturday early, about six boys were attacking a young fella on his own. They were beating and kicking him in the face at the back of Brown Thomas. Everyone was watching, but nobody did anything. I helped him and stood in front of them. Absolute animals they were. You know, I was wondering, because people were saying, you know, it was never like this back in the day. And I said, I don't remember it being as bad as it is. And people were saying, actually, there was a lot going on back in the day. If you just go back and look at the court reports or the Garda reports in the papers, say, for instance, in the 70s or the 80s, somebody actually sent me a screen grab of what looks like the Echo. It's undated, so I don't know when it was, but it was an arranged fight. It was arranged for August 24th, some year, it doesn't say which year, out at the lock. And the guards were saying that about 150 youths, most of them armed with items like chains, knuckle dusters, knives and hurleys, gathered at 9 o'clock, 150 of them, for an arranged fight. Now, thankfully, the Gardaí intervened and no fight took place. But they had a lot of people before the courts who all got suspended sentences of 3 months in St. Pat's and what have you. And they got fined as well. The absolute vast majority of them were from the parish of Ballyfihan and Toker. All sorts of different names, all sorts of different ages. And somebody said there were gangs back in the day. John said back in the day you were the Douglas Cowboys that I knew, the Greenmouth Warriors that I never heard of, and the Toker Tornadoes, to name but a few of the gangs on the south side back in the day. One or two more. Actually, this is interesting because we're talking about the Garda presence on our streets now, the foot patrols by members of An Garda Síochána. Somebody got into, because there was calls on Monday saying they seemed to have kind of backed off a bit with the street foot patrols. Just for your information, guys, Sunday, due to cutbacks, only half a unit works on a Sunday. Every third Sunday, a Garda has to take a rest day through no choice of their own. Someone asked if the guards were afraid to use batons. The answer is yes, they are afraid. For God's sake, a Garda has to write a full report, justify the use of a set of handcuffs when effecting an arrest, given the amount of box ticking required. Who'd want to bother? And that possibly is actually possibly from a serving member of An Garda Síochána. Back after the break, text 0868-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, text 0868-104-106. Well, lads, we've flown him in at huge expense. A Tipperary man living in exile in Limerick. Pat Short.
I didn't think you'd have me in Cork after what happened last year.
Oh, it didn't take you long to bring that up.
It's a pleasure to be here, surrounded by rage.
Revenge is sweet, boy.
I was at the match. Oh, God, love you. It was hard. And the fella that had the tattoo. I met him. I was with him three times in the day.
We still don't know what happened.
I met him after the game, and I was heading back to down to meet somebody in a pub, and he says, you know, I'm the fella, I'm the man. I said, the man what? And he lifted up his arm. I nearly fell away laughing. He's a lovely fella, actually, and fair play to him. A diehard fan.
But what's he going to do with the tattoo?
I don't think you should touch it now because it's more famous than the Cork Hurling team. I think
what happened? We still don't know. Although the team kind of deny that anything happened at half time for them to come out in the second half like that.
Look, as a staunch Tipperary fan, we didn't see it coming. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I mean, I thought at half time, we're still in the game.
Yeah.
Cork are ahead by whatever, it was 6 points, was it, or something. But one of them was a goal. So like there's two, three, four scores. And they weren't really in command of the game that day.
I know.
You know, so I thought, look, there's a chance we could hang in there.
There must have been fierce celebrations, though, then.
After the game.
Oh, for God's sake.
Do you know what? It was tempered with a bit of, Harry, you can't get too excited about that win.
Were you feeling sorry for us then?
Yeah, of course. Of course you'd feel sorry for any bunch of supporters that had to go through that.
It's shocking. We'd never get over it. Anyway, with that out of the way, I didn't intend to bring up the past. So what have we got? I was looking again. Yeah. If you just rewind, Unbelievables, Kilmascurly, Garage, Small Town, Matty, Banshees, and now How to Get to Heaven from Belfast.
Oh, yeah,
is there no end to your brilliance? Like?
Actually, I did another great one, which is not out yet, called The Reluctant Vampire. And I think people will love that. It's a mad BBC comedy. I did it there before Christmas in Bristol, but it was a mad one. I'll get back to the Belfast man, but it was written originally by Morecambe and Wise.
Yeah.
Morecambe wrote it.
Really?
Before he died, yeah.
Oh.
And it was called The Reluctant Vampire. It was a book, and I think his son finished it. And then I think Steve Coogan's people into a comedy. And it's got like Tom Davies, the little fella, he won't mind me saying it. Lenny Rush is in it and the whole lot. And I'm the only Paddy over there. But it was great fun shooting it. Your man from Black Books and all them, Bill Bailey and all them. There's a whole raft of English comedians in
it. You look at Morecambe and Wise and things like that and comedy of that era.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get away with much of that now, though.
No.
I mean, you have to mind your P's and Q's more, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose you do. But then I kind of feel it's coming back into it a bit. There's people are starting to push the button a little bit and poke things because you know, I think it's made a very dull kind of environment that we live in that you can't.
Well, John Cleese has said that.
Yeah.
He's come out and he said it, like comedy's been destroyed and the BBC are afraid.
Yeah, for absolutely. The old cancel culture.
Yeah.
It's gone a step too far. Of course there's things you shouldn't say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course there's topics you shouldn't touch. But people know that.
Yeah.
And everyone else should be a bit of open season and have a bit of crack with it. And that's what's, you poke the bear a little bit and have
you
fun.
You know the duet now with Faye. Did that start because you had a lot of time on your hands?
Yeah.
That team up over COVID
or
something?
It did over COVID, yeah. Just to put it into context, it wasn't that mean I was sitting across the table from my daughter and over breakfast.
Bowl of cornflakes.
I think you're funny. She'd gone to drama school. She'd gone to film school. She'd done that. She was just about to head off on that journey that young actresses do over to London with three of the girls. They're going to casting sessions.
And were you comfortable with that considering it's a hard life? Would you as a parent kind of say, listen, hang on a second. Look,
it's been good to me.
Yeah.
And I think if she got the right attitude and the good work etiquette, it'll be good to her too, you know. I mean, it's a tough life, but what isn't?
Yeah.
You know, what business is easy?
I always think she's
in radio now.
Oh God, she's a real tortured soul.
Yeah,
so.
I know.
Yeah. So then, did you start to kind of have a bit of a laugh and think? Because I used to see kind of shorts.
Yeah. We started just literally
on Instagram.
Yeah, I think what it was is like it's like anybody, like an artist, a painter, or anybody like that. You don't just leave down the brushes for 3 years and then come back to it. Or a musician, you keep just doing your skills. So we thought, like, let's just do some comedy sketches in the garden and putting them up. And the social media platform really started to come into its own then. So we started doing that. And then we got recognition from RT and various other places. Came and said, look, we have the comedy relief show is online. Late is online. The New Year's Eve special is all
crazy days.
It was crazy when you think back on it. Yeah. And we kind of got into it easy enough, but realizing looking back on it now, it was mental. It was nuts. Yeah. You know, it was a very difficult time for everybody. But that's how we started doing it. And then you kind of knew it was all coming to an end. I never forget, actually, we said, look, it's going to come to an end this, you know, as soon. So I started ringing around tiers, booking in gigs and booking in venues, and we wrote a show. And I'll never forget, we were on the Late Late Show before Christmas promoting it, a whole new tour. And that evening at 6 o'clock, they cancelled everything for another 3 or 4 months.
Oh my God.
And it was literally, we were sitting
in,
in the green room going, now we've nothing to talk about. And I could safely say it was the worst interview I ever did in my life.
Why?
Well, we were sitting there, we'd nothing to talk about.
You always have something to talk about.
I know, but we just spent a couple of years doing nothing. And now we'd written a show, we're just about to, and the whole tour was taken out of from underneath us. And the dates we were going to be talking about, the show. So we did, we talked a bit about the show, but there was a real sense of just
disappointment and dejection and deflation, like.
And maybe it wasn't that bad, but to me and Faye, it felt like, what are we
doing? There's going to be a chemistry there, though, doesn't there, between you and Faye. And there is, and it works. Yeah. It's not unlike... There was an amazing chemistry. It was all magnetic chemistry between yourself and John.
Yes, for years.
It's like as if you kind of could second guess what you or he were going to say next.
Yeah. And that was just came from being around each other all the time. Myself and John, like we started out in pubs.
Yeah. Bars, I mean, there was no stage. There was no lighting. There'd be no PA or anything.
And we were just having to crack in bars and corners and with very little PA and lights, no theater, no drapes. And we built up a kind of a theatre kind of vibe in pubs. And then we always wanted to move into theatre, and we got the opportunity to go to New York and do that. But that chemistry between the two of us came about from being in kind of unconventional places and environments that you kind of had to make
the real
work.
Ireland kind
of thing.
With real people and real story. And that's where much of your content comes from,
isn't
it?
Yeah, yeah.
You take a character and you enlarge them, if you like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we always say we write about what's around us. I mean, if I live in the city, I'd be doing city characters. We don't. We live in the country.
Yeah.
And John was the same. And we wrote about characters we remember from school and growing up, and the local sweet shop, the local pub, the local guard, the local teacher, whatever.
Because we sat down over Christmas now again, because, you know, my son's a huge fan, always has been. Whether it was Kilness Gully or Dunbelievables. My daughter, not so much, but at Christmas then, she got introduced to all of the back catalogue, because we watched a lot of the old stuff. Yeah. And it's still as funny as ever.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, I think a lot of it is because of the way we wrote it, and that it was timeless. We didn't pull in on relevant characters. We didn't talk about politicians.
That's right.
There was nothing like that.
Yeah.
Things that happened in the year, we didn't pick
that's
on.
Riot.
Yeah, that's right.
Riot.
I was only talking to someone about that recently. That was for a commercial, would you believe? For the lottery. They would open from 50p to a euro, or pound, I should say. And they wanted someone to soften the blow. So they got the Unbelievables in. And John Kenny's character would ask me, you know, if I do something around these, whatever, because he had to get the information out, you know, about how much it was.
Improvise.
Yeah. And my character would say, that's right. That's right. That's all I did for the whole commercial. It ran for 9 weeks and I lived with that for 20 years. People shouting across the road.
You kept it in the script.
Well, I couldn't avoid it. Even people are shouting at me in supermarkets, that's right.
Do people do that to you, expect you to be funny?
They do. We jumped off it earlier on, How to Get to Heaven from Belfast. Just come out on Netflix.
So that's a girl whose buddy dies or something and she comes back from America, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the idea.
Yeah, and they're off chasing to find out, and then find out she's not, I don't know if
she's not in the coffin or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I know anything about it except I'm in it.
But I was in the Dunn's in Limerick the other day, and some young fella comes up, Peshot, can I get a photograph of you? I seen you in Belfast to Heaven. I didn't know you do things like that. thought that was funny. So it's that, yeah, people are, you know, different projects come up to you.
Yeah,
projects,
I know. You know. They would do, though, because you have to be. I mean, you have to. It's the public, like, yeah, they're your bread and butter. You have to be kind to them, give them the time. And if it's like 50 selfies a day, that's just the way it is.
That's what you got
to
do. Yeah.
But you know something? I was only thinking about it because Port McGee had their first comedy festival only 2 weeks ago. Chris Kent went down, joined Bernard Casey, and a load of comedians from all over Ireland went down for it for the weekend.
Wow.
On what would have normally been a very, very quiet, dull, maybe even the pubs might be closed for the, you know, the third week of January. The place was absolutely black. And then they put on open mics in the pubs and everything in the afternoon. It was Bernard put it together in fairness, but he got a load of people to come down and to be part of it. There's a huge resurgence for comedy.
There is at the moment. It's massive.
I mean, I'd like to invite you to next year's, the second Port McGee Comedy Festival.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for that, Neil.
You'll be washing your hair or something.
But there is a huge, I think it's online. It's since COVID. A lot more people are doing comedy and podcasting has brought out more comedy. There's more comedy shows on. If you look at the any theatres, programming.
So let's look at it. Like, I was looking at it yesterday when I knew you were coming in, right?
Yeah.
On Lee's side, just in the next couple of months, Chris Kent,
yeah,
Joanne McNally, Deirdre O'Kane, Kyla Cobbler, Jason Byrne, Bernard Casey. We got Live at the Marquee going, City Limits, The Opera House, The Everyman, Virgin Media Park, Cypress Avenue, all featuring comedy.
Yeah. People need a laugh. Obviously.
Yeah.
I know, but it's true. It's an interesting observation, because I know it because I'm booking theatres. I'm trying to book shows around the country. And you don't want to be too close to another comedian because, you know, there's only a limited audience in certain towns. Now. It's getting very difficult.
Yeah.
It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And they're all selling out.
Yeah.
They're all doing big business.
And there's a new generation of people who want it too. It's not sculling 8 or 10 pints and going home with a hangover and writing off the next day. They want different sources of entertainment, don't they?
Yeah,
they really do.
Absolutely.
And do you know another thing I saw recently, and I absolutely loved every single episode of it, the television series that you did with Mike Hanrahan from Stockton's.
Oh, yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a beautiful show.
So you went to all different counties. Explain how that worked.
Well, what it was it was called Songs of Ireland. So we took typical songs that people would take for granted. Spencer Hill. Everyone knows Spencer Hill. But do you know it? Do you really know it?
Yeah.
And then it was given to young artists to do their interpretation of it. There was a young girl in Dublin who's a rap artist, and I'm just desperate with names. So
that's grand.
Forgive me for that.
There was a lot of different episodes.
She did Raglan Road. She never heard of Kavanagh.
Saw it.
Saw the episode. And it was she did a rap. And she was a girl that her background, she was born in Dublin of, I think, Ghanaian parents. And she went into a beautiful spoken word section of the song, which she wrote all about her love for Dublin, and which was Raglan Road is all about this man's love for a woman. And she took that and interpreted it a different way. And it was just stunning. Hair up in the back of your
neck. So for every county you visited in the van,
we took a song that would be related to that county. There was funny sides to it as well. I mean, we did, another young artist down in Wexford. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. And it's going to kill me because I literally couldn't get him out of my head for ages. And we did.
That didn't take long.
No. Ages, I said, it's 2 years since we did the show, Neil. Give us a break. But we did an old woman from Wexford. And of course, we used to have an expert meeting us, you know, Zeph and Mike, to give us the breakdown, lowdown on the song.
Yeah.
And honest to God, this happened more times. We'd meet him on the keys in Wexford and say, well, give us the lowdown. Oh, that song's not about Wexford at all. What?
Was that the crappy boy?
No, there was an old woman from Wexford.
Oh, was it?
Originally, there was an old woman from Boston. And it was an American song taken back to Ireland, interpreted by, and then put out as Wexford. There was an old woman from Carlow.
There's a version for every county.
Yeah. And that happened 9 times. And we had to turn around and go, listen, hey, we're trying to do a TV show here. Just say it's about Wexford and get on with it.
But you know what I love about you? Because not only are you funny, but you're talented musically as well. And I know we've managed to hijack a guitar.
Yeah.
But your saxophone playing is fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, that's what I started as. I started playing jazz and
Why saxophone? Why jazz?
Well, it goes back to my granduncle was a saxophone and a flute player in the, I have to say this slowly, Frank Lee Cayley band. I did a TV show in London.
Saxophone and a Cayley band?
Yeah, but do you know what?
That was out there.
There was a lineup. These were the guys that he played the Royal Albert Hall. And they were the guys that played to all the troops and during the war. And you remember those famous photographs you'd see of guys in tuxedos on the stage?
Well, yeah.
That was the Frank Lee Cayley band. They had a full...
You didn't get a saxophone, did you?
I did, yeah. Wow. He left it to my dad and my dad gave it to me and I started playing. My dad played it first and I picked it up. So there was a saxophone in the house, basically. And that's how it started.
Amazing.
And he was incredible. But every time I was doing that TV show, I'd say, Frank Lee Cayley man. No, it's not Frank Lee. It's Frank Lee. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. But he was an incredible musician. I did a show called Who Do You Think You Are? And he came up on it. And we always thought he was working in telecommunications in London. But he was actually a scientist in a very underground British thing.
They can be alarming, can't they? The stories that people come up. Because they do a deep dive into your life, don't they? And you don't know in advance.
No, you have no idea. I mean, I rang all my family and said, are y'all all right with this? Because if something comes up, you know, I don't know, but something might come up. I remember my dad, he's passed away. He said to me, what's the worst could happen? There'll be a murderer in the family. That's exactly what we found.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
On my mother's side, so he got away with it.
No way.
It was a really fascinating case with a link to Cork, actually.
He didn't kill a Cork person.
No, there was a magistrate was killed called Bradshaw.
How far back?
Oh, it would have been... Well, his grandsons came to Ireland in 1966, and there was another article done in the papers about it. So, work that one out. It would have been 1870s, around there.
Well, it was about land, or...?
Yeah, of course it was. It was land, or also this magistrate landlord was a really bad egg, you know, and he did lots of incidents. But anyway, my granduncle, he was a granduncle of mine, was accused of murdering. He was only 8 in his early 20s. And he was sent to Clonmel prison. And this is all in the TV show. And they did analysis of his clothes. And it was one of the very first big cases of blood tracing. And it was a doctor in the University Hospital in Cork. This is what came out on the programme. That he had designed this way of testing blood.
Right.
As it would have been very primitive to what we know today.
Of course.
It was the very start of it. And as a result, it got headlines around the world because your man was a magistrate and this was new technology and there was articles in the New York Times about it and all sorts of things. They couldn't prove it. Here's the interesting one. His name was Alice. His second name was Alice. And the day after he was released from prison because they had nothing to prove, he went to America. And one would say, how could he afford to go to America? Well, the story was the magistrate's wife paid for him to go to America.
Why?
Because she was involved in it.
What?
It was a gang involved. So he was shot and everything, right? And this is all from Dublin Castle files.
Archives.
All interviews by the police and the whole lot and everything else. After the show was aired, they never proved that. They couldn't prove that he did anything. I got a phone call from my daughter's piano teacher. And she says, Pat, it's Mary here. I said, hi, Mary, how are you doing? Good. Do you realise my second name is Alice? I said, no, I didn't.
Who the heck is Alice?
And she says, we have the gun.
You're joking
no,
me.
No, I'm deadly serious. This is where the 1966 thing comes in. Back in 1966, his grandsons came back from America and they said, look, we have this story. Our grandfather shot a magistrate and all. And he said that. You know. And what had happened was they'd gone with the gun and they buried it with the other Alice's, the cousins, which was her family.
Yeah.
And they had the gun in 1966 buried. So they dug it up.
The coffin?
The gun. The gun.
They buried it somewhere.
They dug it up and gave it to the two boys who brought it back to America. But before they brought it back, being 1966, it was 50th anniversary of 1916. And all the papers were looking for stories. I think it was either Irish Press at the time did a story, front page photograph with the boys holding the gun. So there's documentation of it.
It's amazing that story because, not going off on another topic, but AI now would allow people to do real deep dives into their families. And I recently did one with a flight lieutenant, TJ Prendeville, who was a granduncle of mine who was one of the first three Air Corps pilots for the Irish state when it formed in 1921. And his backstory was incredible. Now, before artificial intelligence or ChatGPT, you would never be able to get information like that. This is just a treasure trove of stuff.
You'd be into archives and annals and all sorts of things.
Because everyone's got a backstory. Because there's so many generations of us, there's got to be interesting stories going back along.
I mean, that was a fascinating story. I mean, it was funny.
There's a sketch in it.
I don't know. It was definitely. I mean, there was a doctor on it with me, and he's a doctor historian, and he was going through. it, the evidence shows that this happened on that day. And, and of course, me being just Joe Blog, I was like, Harry Jensen did it all right, didn't he? You must stop cutting. No, I can't. I'm a doctor. I can't. Unless I have the information in front of me factually, I can't make an assertion like that. Okay, fair. Sorry. We're filling me away again. And I forgot myself after a while. Ah, Jensen definitely did it. And you have to go cut. And then when we eventually cut, he turns around and says, oh, Jensen did it all right.
It's kind of like a human reaction, though, isn't
it? Yeah.
But you, I mean, you can turn anything into a laugh, but that is a very serious topic, of course.
Yeah.
You know, a murder wouldn't be taken anyway lightly. No. But you got to have a laugh, don't you?
There you go.
You know.
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot more information there that I'm not going on about today. And it was in the programme and it was covered in the programme. But he God, if anyone deserved it.
A magistrate.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No disrespect to judges in general.
No. This fella wasn't there. He wasn't that crowded at all.
All right. So why have we got a guitar then?
Well, yeah, we have it here. Well, I thought you, I heard you were a very good singer, Neil.
This is about you, Mr. Short, not me.
Not at all.
This is about you.
I'm in your church now.
Two eggs, two rashes, two sausages, two button, blue one, one black and white. Running like a town on top of each other.
Oh, this is too lovely.
You have some taters, milk over there, and the sugar in the bowl. Says she, do you want some sauce with that? Says, nay, I do in my hole.
God, who tuned that?
My voice, is it?
No, not your voice. Or is it maybe your voice is putting the guitar off?
Jake tuned it. He's a guitar player, you think you know
is
better.
Is he? Listen to that now at home, let's see. Oh, mother of God. Take that down to the School of Music, will you? And burn it.
We'll try and tune the guitar and come back after the break for a tune.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
You literally have broken out in a sweat trying to tune that thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, where'd you get that, Jake? In a lucky bag?
Fisher Price, that's it.
Yeah. The end of the big Christmas morning. Yeah. So is it in good shape, the jalopy?
Close enough. Are you ready to go?
Me?
Yeah, you.
No way. Give me a break.
When I wake up in the morning and I jump straight out of bed, where I'm going to be luminous jacket and shake off me old porter head. Time for the fancy breakfast to put Moody in the bowl. Just head to the Satire Garage for the jumbo breakfast roll. Two eggs, two sausage, two rush, two bacon, two pudding, rum, black and white. All slashed like a tower on top of each other and round up good and tight. If you have some tater, mix over there, arrange sugar in the bowl. Say she, do you want some sauce? That says I do my roll. Come on, keep up, Devil.
Well, you're a chipper, you're sparkly, you're
ricky, you're starting to make it up now.
The whole. No better sight than melting butter from a jumbo breakfast roll.
2 weeks, two such, two nights, two bacon, two pudding, two black and white, and now
all placed like a tower on top of each other and rolled up good and tight. If you have some tea, the milk's over there and put sugar in the bowl. Say, Sheila, you want some sauce? And that's as I do in my roll.
Are you still going? You're
still going.
Fair play, chum. Now, just the other day after me rolling team, me go hug an awful leg. Well, I went to me doctor and see that's an air three blocker that you're having there every morning with your cup of tea and your sausage and your break. I know there's too many words in that deal. I know
what I can't get from.
Just not thinking Bob Dylan like. You know what I mean?
From the eggs.
Fuck it out,
can't you? Such a
lifestyle, yes, walk 5 miles, tea in the night, you just can't know. But again, me had to say two runny eggs, a jumbo breakfast roll.
Two eggs, two rice, two rest, two bacon, two button, one black on white, on it. Or place like a tower on top of each other and round up good and tight.
Bend it out.
If you're having some tea, there's milk over there, you find sugar in the bowl. Says she, do you want some sauce? But that says I do my roll.
We can't do any poor audience out there.
I'm made for it.
The guitars, take it out there and burn it. Put it to some use in the fire.
That's my claim to fame now, you know. I'll never be out of overlive that, outlive that.
Oh, I'll tell you, George, yes. You'll be a long time getting over it. It's more like it's all the audience.
Oh, my God. Here's two quick ones. I love Pat Short. He's a legend. I saw him in the Opera House with John in Dumbelievables. I never laughed so much in my life. Comedy gold. They want to say thanks for the laughs and John Kenny, RIP, says Tony and Douglas. Fella here says, I grew up with Pat Short. His late father lived behind my house for years. And where he grew up was only down the road from me. Not quite sure where that was.
I turn lean. In Turles?
It's him from Eugene. Do you know Eugene, who tormented as a young fella, no?
Could you narrow it down a little bit, Neil?
Which Eugene?
Yeah, exactly.
A And don't forget Pat Shorten, The Young Offenders.
Oh,
of
yeah,
course.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah. Oh, my God, it's such a great crew. All the lads working on it and the actors. I mean, just, Jesus, names failed me again there.
You just work with too many people. But you're the star. You're not supposed to remember
no,
other people's
no, but
names.
They were the stars. Jeez, I mean, that young guy in Young Offenders, he's going to kill me. And what an improv. I mean, he just was incredible on set every day.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
of them
yeah,
were. Yeah.
Did you see Christy?
I didn't know. I
oh
haven't seen
God,
it.
Oh, my God, man.
No.
You've got to see it.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's absolutely stunning, this film. It's scooping awards all over the world. Based in Cork, filmed in Cork. The
oh, I thought it was the fellow outside the door.
Actually, sometimes...
I met Martin, all right. I didn't see Christy. Sorry, Neil. Sorry. No, I hear it's good.
It yeah. is. Yeah, it's yeah. top class.
Yeah.
So, listen, what's next then, besides the Opera House? More filming?
Yeah,
more touring?
I'm actually starting... I got to go to... I'm working this weekend and I got to go to Italy next week and then I'm starting
Italy.
A film. Yeah, I'm just doing something out there, but I'm starting a film on Thursday then, I think, when I come back from Italy.
Amazing.
And that'll be running in conjunction with the dates over the next month or
okay.
so.
Okay.
A really good director. I can't say much about it, but a really good young director, but an amazing writer.
Okay. It's well, success with everything exciting. You do and with the tour. And regards to Faye, I have some tickets to give away for the gig on 6th of March. It will sell out, lads, so I wouldn't be hanging around for tickets for this one.
Who gave you clearance to do that?
I just made it up, actually. See, when it's out there, you can't take it back.
No.
You're lucky I didn't say 10 pairs of tickets.
You just did.
3 sets of tickets. Pick up the phone, 0818104106. Great to have you in the studio. The one and only Pat Short. Great to see you, kid. Well done.
Head on to Prendeville now.
0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
That was a good laugh. I have no idea how that sounded, particularly the song, although I'm getting an indication from people. Somebody says, ah, Jesus. Somebody else said, I'm not saying that you're a terrible singer, but if Van Gogh or Van Gogh heard you sing, he'd have cut off his other ear. Well, that's absolutely charming, I have to say. Thank you very much. Prendeville, you murdered that, says Alan. Pat Short for Eurovision. Have you ever tried to sing that song? It is so fast. It's just ridiculously fast. I don't know how he remembers all of the words of it. It's just, I'm making excuses for an abysmal performance, but there you go. Caught on the hop. Anyway, text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. Talking about a lot of comedians this morning. Charlie Chaplin from earlier on this morning, and now the great Pat Short. John Morgan, did you star alongside Pat Short?
I didn't exactly, Neil. What happened was Pat was in the episode before me. It was season 4, episode 3. Pat was in, and I was in episode 4. But what it was is... we were going up for our costume fittings there up in St. Vincent's Hurlingham Football Club.
Yeah.
And I was in there and I actually played the role of a Garda down in Kinsale. And I was getting fitted anyway. And one of the lads said to me, he said, look, keep this quiet now. But he says, in the other room there, he said, we have Pat Short. And he's getting fitted for, you know, whatever he was doing at the time. So I said, really? He said, yeah, he's in one of the back rooms. So I was contemplating then. Would I go over and start looking for him? But I suppose, Neil, I wanted to be professional. And I didn't. But I kind of wished I did because, you know, how often do you get the opportunity to meet Pat Short and he only probably 20 feet away from me?
Listen, we've all done that and we've regretted it. Someone that we admire or like. Sometimes you're a bit afraid as to how they might react kind of thing or you might feel as if you're annoying them, do you know? He wouldn't have been like
that,
though.
He is a star. And like I've been to a load of shows in the Everyman in the Cork Opera House. And I was on to you before about John Kenny. And I don't know, do you remember my phrase there when I was on to you? I was saying John Kenny grabbed life with two hands and he never let go.
Yeah, sure of that. Absolutely.
But 100%. They were incredible, though. I mean, the two lads, they were brilliant. And I really admired them. And there I was now getting fitted for the Young Offenders and he literally probably 20 feet away from me. But again, I suppose, Neil, you're trying to be professional and like,
yeah.
He's a kind of a big star really, you
yeah.
know. And
it's like this. What is it? The in Latin is it carpe diem? Is it or something like that? You know, seize the day, seize the moment. You know, I wonder how many people like you and me. I mean, like without hogging your limelight, I was at the tennis last year in New York, and standing just walking right past it was nobody else there in the whole wild world. It was very busy, but it was just one of those kind of like slow motion moments. Walking right past me on his own was Mats Wilander. The tennis player. Oh, I was a huge fan of Wilander in the 80s, Mats Wilander.
He was.
And I remember my brain saying to me, you should stop him and ask him for a selfie. And then the other side of my brain said, nah, he's in a hurry. He won't want to stop and talk to you. And in the split second it took to process that, he was gone.
Yeah, and I think you've said it there correctly. We all get into that frame of mind. And I suppose we're afraid, Neil, in a way of showing ourselves up. And It's just, as you said, you don't get time to think. But when you do get time to think, then you say you should have done it.
And the moment's gone. Yeah.
I should have done it. But look, it is what it is.
I bet other people might have stories of things that they should have done, or somebody that they admired or they approached. I mean, you don't know how it's going to result. But what the hell? They can just say no or walk away or whatever. But at least you'll know then. Probably won't like it.
The fair rejection, Neil, more than anything else. But to be fair, most are fine, because I was on to before and I told you I met Paul McGrath in Granada, and I jumped out of the car and he was an absolute gent.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know,
but you could get, it's kind of like, what version of Roy would you get? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I don't mean that to be insulting to the man, like, but it could be on any given day, like, you know, if you went for a photograph.
Yeah, you're right. You know? I think what it is, Neil, if you did approach them and just say no, you didn't get a favourable response. You don't want to take away the admiration you have for them. So I think a slight bit of panic sets in, and that's probably human nature then as well.
I saw a video popped up there. Forgive me now, I'm not very good at this, but it was a video of a soccer team who were walking through kind of a tunnel area. It was a Premier League team. I don't know which one it was. Somebody will remember. And all of the mascots were lined up on the right-hand side, right? And the point of the post was, how rude can multimillionaire soccer players be? Every single member of the team walked right past the mascots, didn't look left or right, all of these young boys that were there waiting to meet their heroes, and completely ignored them.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Neil, because when we went to see even Liverpool back in the 90s, you could get photos. We waited outside, you could be waiting an hour, and I got photos with the likes of Bruce Grobler and all these fellas at the time, and Jan Morby. But like, the last game I went to there was just a year ago with my son, and it was a Champions League game, and you could feel that they're in a different world completely.
Actually, the lads now are telling me it was Chelsea. And here's the post that went with it. Chelsea's arrogant and entitled players have come under fire after blanking a group of young mascots before the FA Cup tie against Hull City. It was the wrong thing to do.
It's just they're completely in the zone now, Neil, and it's their lifestyle, and it's probably a bit robotic for them too, I suppose, to be fair, but like, they don't interact with the public. You'd see them getting on or getting off the buses, and they have their AirPods in or whatever, and it's, I don't get the vibe anymore.
There was another film then that I saw, which was a young lad who obviously lived with, he was a small little fella, a massive Liverpool fan, and he was inside in school, right? This was last week. This one came up. And I think he may have had spina bifida. He certainly had disabilities that he was trying to live and cope with, but he was a huge fan. And Salah comes in, and like he kind of like does a double take. He can't believe he's there with his crayons. And in comes the Liverpool soccer squad, and they say to him, "We hear that there's a really diehard Liverpool supporter in here. Hands up, who is it?" And it's brilliant. Your man puts the little fella puts his hand up very slowly, kind of very nervous. And they walked in one by one, but they kind of waited 10 or 15 seconds between each other, you know. But before you knew it,
to process,
and before you know it, the entire Liverpool squad were in there. And then before he knows it, he's in Anfield and he's walking out on the pitch and everything. It was incredible for that young fella.
That's brilliant. I think, as you said there, I think to be fair to them, like they obviously can't reach out to everyone and anyone, but those with disabilities and stuff like that, they do need to appoint. They do try.
Makes a huge difference to people's lives. Yeah. It does, really and truly. Seize the day next time, John.
I will indeed. And yourself too, Neil.
Take care of yourself, pal. Take care. Take care. Well, pick it up in the morning. You can text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. Massive response yesterday and also online. I know on the Red FM Facebook page and my own Instagram page, it just lit up with the Rebel Rebuild video and all of the beautiful comments. Many, many people found it very, very heartwarming how communities come together. Well done. Here's a typical example. Coleman says, well done with Abby's house in Beach Park to all who are involved. I've taken out the bits about me, Coleman, if you don't mind, but you know, acknowledging everybody else that went through it, Damien and also the Lord Mayor, proving that blood is thicker than water on Leaside, but Cork blood is the thickest and the warmest and the kindest. I got loads of different beautiful texts on this from people, and I want to give them a blast in the morning, but I leave you with this one last one. I'm writing on behalf of many people in Cork to say a heartfelt thank you to all for sharing the journey of the Moore family through the Cork's Rebel Rebuild over the last couple of months. You've provided a platform that brought real awareness to the Moore family situation, helped coordinate and build momentum around to support them, and allow the wider Cork community to follow regular updates on the rebuild over the past few months. For me, it captured exactly why we are Cork and proud. Unconditional kindness, generosity, unity, and true community spirit. I also want to highlight and say a huge well done to the project manager, Damien Cuff, a true Cork unsung hero. Hearing Damien on the radio with you, even while managing his own health challenges at the time on oxygen, was incredibly moving. Yet week after week, he continued to give his time voluntarily to support the rebuild. The updates showed how deeply he cared about the Moore family, how committed he was to coordinate volunteers, recruiting helpers, all of the trades, even involving his own sons and wife in the effort. As we wish the Moore family every happiness in their new home, I just wanted to ask, is there a way we as a community can acknowledge Damien's incredible contribution? It would be lovely to see him recognised or gifted something as a small token of appreciation. But thank you again for showcasing what makes Cork such a special place. We are Cork, and hopefully it will never change, says Rachel. Now, you obviously sent that to me, and thank you for it, Rachel, before we had the Lord Mayor on, who wants to give an achievement award and a civic reception to Damien Cuff in City Hall. And I think that is a wonderful way to acknowledge his incredible contribution and indeed all of the tradespeople who got involved and the businesses who supported. But thank you for that. It reminds us as well that we live in the best county in Ireland and the best place in the world. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.